comments of Mr. Veteran Lokota. Mr. Mathonsi then will deal with the program of action, and then we'll then go to the port of the department, then reflect on that, and then adjourn the meeting. So as you see, the agenda is slightly going to change. I'm not sure that Mr. Mathonsi, I'm correct in terms of the line of approach we agreed to advise members to consider.
Yes, Chairperson. Yeah, because the presentation by the department on their quarters is going to be a long presentation. So I thought, no, Chair, that if we start with item number six and then we'll go to item number seven and then we'll go back to item number three, so that legal service people that are here from Parliament and also from the state law advisor, then they can just leave when we deal with item number three at the end. Thanks,
Okay,
Chair.
members, I'm requesting your comment on the amendment of the agenda and adoption so that we move.
Chairperson?
Your co-chair?
Yes, I think that is acceptable. So I would like to move for the adoption of the agenda with those suggested changes.
Thank you, Honorable Van der Merwe, co-chair. Any seconder to the amendment of the agenda?
Chairperson?
Honorable Ross?
Chair, I second that proposal.
Thank you, Honorable Ross. That affirm our agenda for today, members. Can I invite Mr. Mathonsi to give us apology, to render apologies, if introductions, then we then request the minister to introduce his team, then we'll then go to the item. Mr. Mathonsi?
I only received from the committee only one apology from Ms. Mulekwa. She said she's flying down to Cape Town as we speak. And then also there was an apology from the Deputy Minister of Affairs. Those are the only two I received.
Thank you, Mr. Mathonsi. Minister?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members of the Committee. Yes, as it was said, the Deputy Minister is attending a Cabinet Committee on the JCPS Cabinet Committee. He won't be with us. We have agreed to share functions so that I come here and he goes to the Cabinet Committee. Chairperson, let me allow the DG to introduce the team that is accompanying him. DG, please.
Thank you, Minister, and good morning to you, Honourable Chairperson, and the Minister, and the Committee, Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee. So let me then start by introducing the team from Home Affairs. This morning, we're joined by DDG Jackson McKay, representing IMS, and then Acting DDG HR, Metambane Molifesfanyetso, DDG Tulani Mabuso, representing Institutional Planning and Support, Advocate Connie Muize, responsible for counter-corruption and security services, and then our CFO, Mr. Gordon Hollamby, and then DDG Thomas Sigama, responsible for civic services, and then our CIO, Tantla Mabaso, and then from the ministry, the Chief of Staff, Mudupi, Maisela Kamduli, and Mr. Muzi Njokwe, and Madiete Makua, Sia Kozos, the minister's spokesperson, and from our strategy planning and policy team, Mr. Sitle Mtia. And I hope I've covered everyone. And then from the BMA, it's the commissioner, Dr. Mike G, commissioners, General Shilembe, and the Major in Tupane. So that's the team from our CMA. Thank you so much, Chairperson and the Minister.
Thank you very much. I've noted that the Commissioner Love is, you know, with us in the meeting. You're welcome, Commissioner Love. I'm not sure you're alone or with the team. Commissioner Love?
Thanks very much, Chairperson. I am alone at the moment. The CEO and his team will be joining. They had a meeting first thing this morning, so they'll be joining shortly.
No, thank you for always...
Greetings to you and the members. Thank you.
No, thank you for always interacting with us. Just a recap, members, you know that the private members bill was presented to the committee last year, and we did interacted with the engage on the bill, and we also allowed the process of the consultation that at the time convened by Advocate Bongo for consultation stakeholders, and also reflected on the discussion which were led by former Minister Vale Musa, and ultimately the cabinet process, which some of the issues find expression in the cabinet bill. And I think that you made observation for the minister's his comment on both, which highlighted the issues which were captured, and also issues that will weaken the process moving forward. The second point is that you members of the committee, extensively dealt with the issues of the sufficient public hearing for the people of the South African stakeholders, political parties, to make comments on the issues that are raised by the bill. And you needed sufficient time so that we are guided by the people of South Africa. You have also reflected extensively on the cautioning the committee on the time frame that the Constitutional Court has mandated us to complete this process. Then you have attempted to caution the committee in our deliberation last week that there won't be enough time to interface with this process. I'm just recapping the issues that the committee has reflected on when we interface with this bills, both that is presented by Minister and Honorable Lukota. We'll then take, allow Ms. Veteran Lukota to make comments on the issues that were raised by the minister in particular. And then I'll allow Mr. Matonsi to then give us a present a program, and we'll then assist the committee on how we're going to deal with these matters forward. Mr. Matonsi, can I establish if a veteran quota is in the meeting?
Chairperson, unless if you use a different gadget, it's not in the meeting. I just called his secretary now. She's taking up with you.
Okay. But in the meantime, let's reflect on the two, let me invite members on the two issues which are critical, because Ms. Veteran Lukota will be joining us to make his responses and comments on the issues that they've raised. One, on the program of action. Two, on the consideration of the committee for extension, as you have correctly impressed in our last meeting. And I'll appreciate that if Mr. Honorable Lukota, Mr. Matonsi, you can locate him so that we have a fruitful engagement on his, particularly on his view in response to the issues that you raised on his private members' bill. Members, can I start with... Honorable Ross?
Sorry, Chairperson, are we engaging on the public participation feedback at this point in time?
Mr. Matonsi?
Chairperson, I'm just engaging with Ms. Lukota at the moment on the phone.
Okay. What we're suggesting is that let's engage on the public participation your comment, which we raised, the committee raised last week, and also on the time frame the Constitutional Court has given us. Then we'll get to Mr. Scott, Mr. Aruma Lukota, to impress on the issues that the minister has raised. I'm inviting you on those two items that the committee has to deal with and dispose quickly. Honourable Ross?
Okay, thank you, Chair. So just to start with, I think we'd all really appreciate it. These documents came on Friday night at 23 minutes past seven. That we just have a little bit more time to consider the, I'm not saying that we need to postpone anything, but it's quite onerous to say that there's hundreds of pages of public participation input and we need to read it and give it, do it full justice over a weekend when we have other responsibilities as well. So I'd just like to ask that we get these documents a week in advance as we should do. Chairperson, again, it's public participation on the papers. You know, so, you know, not at one stage have we ever act, as a committee that I remember sat in a hall of people and heard from the public. And I think it's something that we need to correct. I mean, we've been to some offices in our oversight. Often they're just empty, they're miraculously empty. And it's very difficult for us to actually speak to people. I think it's something as a committee that we need to address going forward. But in terms of substantive input, I think a key theme that came through in this feedback was accountability. And the issue of accountability came through again and again and again. I think if you look at the DRSA inputs and they gave some of the comments that the communities had given, the word accountable and accountability came through again and again. And so whatever, you know, legislation that we pass in terms of electoral reform, this is a key word and a key principle that we need to really make sure we enact. OTA raises an interesting point, or OTA. You know, it's a question for Honorable Lakota. Is really, you know, we talk about independence, participating in a proportional manner. And they raise an interesting question on who will have the power and authority to remove an independent candidate from power and under what circumstances. So I'd like to get the response to that one. I think it's a good point. In a party system, then you have various levels and mechanisms of holding members of parliament to account. But how would this be done for independent candidates who are standing alone? And what exact, you know, what processes and procedures would be followed in this regard? And I think this is a relevant question to this bill, as well as the other bill which is being considered. And then, Chairperson, in terms of the Elders Council, they raised the question of a president versus a prime minister, just to get Honourable Lakota's feedback on that question from the public. Should we have a presidential system or a system of a prime minister under this bill? And then finally, just a comment on the Action Coalition of Women's Rights Organizations. And they raise a very important point. You know, they bring attention that our democracy has not been able to grapple effectively with women's equal participation because of multidimensional poverty and lack of human dignity in which women and their families grow up and operate in, which is a stumbling block for them. And I think the question is, with the proposed or the recommended percentage of women participants and representatives of political parties, how is it foreseen that that is implemented across the board with independents as well? Then, Chair, in terms of the court action, I think you know, the committee's been put in a very difficult place. The DA had said right in the beginning of this process that we should take the Van Zyl Slabbert report, which was very extensive, which already had a draft bill, and dust that off and use that as a starting point. It didn't happen, and we were left in the position where we received the bill extremely late. And Chairperson, I've gone back and I've looked at the timeframes that the IEC gave us and moved them forward. We're about a year behind what those timeframes said. But I think it's important, Chair, that you know, not only do we, if one has to approach the court, one needs to say, Let's call it the COPA bill is the Section 75 bill, which doesn't require NCOP. The other bill is a Section 76 bill. So that requires NCOP cooperation as well. So I think we'd also need to understand what is the time frame, what time frame of extension, what is the interim measure? And this is why I asked last week that we get the input from our legal advisors about how we would meet the requirements of the judgment. What interim measure would one put in place to meet the requirement of the judgment? I think that's an important thing that we would need to get from the committee before just going there and saying, we just want an extension. We would need to go there and say, well, what was the cause of the delay? What is the proposed way forward and time frame? And what is the interim proposal that we're going to put together? Because it's, independent candidates will have to contest that election. So I don't think it's good enough to just ask for a time extension. We would need to give that sort of proposal and what our thoughts are on that. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. I think, the legal team, they are here. They will advise us later on. We had an extensive discussion with them on this matter. And I think as the interface with the committee, they will highlight sufficient grounds that compelled us to consider to request for an extension. I'm going to invite Mr. Mathonsi. He has just a brief report on the interaction with Mr. Algota, because we're dealing with this matter here, this private member's bill that has been submitted to the committee and is before the committee, so that in our discussion, we are alive to the issues that is reported to Mr. Matun. I want Mr. Matun just to take the committee into confidence so that members are aligned to the issues. Thank you, Mr. Matun.
Thank you, Jefferson. I just spoke to Ms. Elkota now, and then like as I did last week, to remind him that no, we are going to, the committee is going to get his responses on what the minister made as a comments on the bill. Last week and today, he indicated to me that he doesn't have anything to comment on what the minister said because he's 100% satisfied with what the minister said. So today he's not going to be in the meeting. He said he has got other issues that he's attending to. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, members. That is a report from the Mr. Honorable Veteran Lokota to our secretary. I'm going to continue with the members to interface with the contribute on the issues. Then after that, Mr. Mathonsi will give us a draft program, and then we'll invite the legal team. Then we'll close on this item. Honorable Lokota. Honorable Kanyile.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to everyone in the meeting. I believe that we are on the private member's bill. What I would like to say is that as we would like to reserve our comment on the private member's bill, we still need to consult with our caucus. Then once we have done this, I think we'll be in a better position to comment. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kanyile, on your contributions. Honorable Ramuloven. Honorable Tito.
Thanks, Chair. Morning to everyone who is present today. Chair, I also like to concur with Honorable Ross on what you are saying, and also Honorable Kanyile, that let's read our papers and then we will come back. Thank you.
Members, which papers we okay. Honorable Pile.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, in light of the submission made by Eddie, I think, you know, there's nothing much to be said in terms of the private member's bill, because the honorable member that has presented the bill is happy with the presentation made by the minister. And hence, you know, it does not even call for any discussion on that bill. And I'm happy to proceed with the rest of our processes in terms of public hearings. So I submit that we should actually proceed to that item. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Honorable Pito. You nearly confused me, but I realize that you're raising a correct point on your part. Honorable Fanar Merwe, co-chair.
Yes, Chairperson, thank you very much. Sorry, I had connection issues. I would like to concur with the Honorable Pillay. If Honorable Lakota is happy with the executive bill or the bill that we will be processing, then I think as a committee, we need to thank the Honorable Lakota for taking the initiative to propose a private member's bill. I think a lot of work has gone into it. You know, and I think we thank him for taking the initiative. At the end of the day, as members of parliament, it is our responsibility to correct legislation where we identify gaps. So we thank the veteran Lakota for his private member's bill, also for those who took the time to give their inputs to his bill. I think, of course, you know, he will also play a very important role in guiding us as a committee as we go forward in terms of processing the amendment bill that will be before us. So I do concur that we need to proceed. We obviously did engage his private member's bill, and most of that will be captured in the executive bill that we will be processing through our parliamentary process and through our public hearings. So I also feel that we should proceed, and we thank him very much for the work that he did in embarking on this process. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Fanar Merwe, for your contributions. Honorable Tswako? Honorable Lukwase?
Chair. Let me concur with the member Tito that we will have a look at it, and we'll probably have, you know, the submission. We'll just have a bit of time just to reflect on it, please. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Tswako. Honorable Lukwase? Honorable Modise? Mza? Honorable Modise, Mza?
Thank you so much, Chair. I think members are correct. Let me also take this opportunity and thank Mr. Lukwase in his absence for the extensive work that you would have done on the private members' bill. I think it has been critiqued and it was open for comments, and that has been done. I think as a committee, we then need to move and so that we are also focused on the bill that we are dealing with. Of course, we are sure that some of the things that are in the Lakota's members' private bill might find expression in the processes when we proceed with this bill. So I think I want to concur with the co-chair that we need to proceed. It is also difficult to make comments on the Lakota's bill in his absence. And one must also indicate that in most cases, he's never present in this portfolio committee to process these issues, including this one of his private bill. But thank you so much, Chair. Those are my comments.
Any other member who I might have not noted? Okay, I think members are in one to appreciate the work that has been done by veteran Lakota. As I've indicated that we had deliberated at the time it was presented to the committee. We've made our observation as members of the committee, and the executive bill also take note of some of the areas that are included in the executive bill. Member Lakota appreciates the work that also has been done on the part of the minister and the former minister Vale Musa task team. and find comfort in the process that has been done, the issues that have been raised, and has been reported, that he appreciates and concur with the executive bill process. Now that we're going to interact with this matter, we still have to allow political parties, as they've been raising their wage, to make submission in the process of the public hearing, all stakeholders that will be interacting with this bill in a public hearing, political parties, NGOs, and that opportunity will be open so that we're properly guided, so that when Parliament consider, at least there's been solicited through our people and the contributions of all the political parties that are in Parliament and those that are interested in their various ends. I'm going to invite Mr. Matonzi to just take us through on the report on how we're going to carry the public participation, and then invite the legal team. And then members comment, and then invite the minister to deal with the report.
Okay, Chairperson. Just trying to share the Hello, are you able to see the?
Yes, yes, proceed.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Chairperson. I'm sorry, my headphones got off. Yeah, so in terms of the, we have done a draft program for the public hearings as a decision that was taken last week at the meeting. What we have done here, we have divided the committee into two groups. There will be Group A, which will be focusing on the inland provinces. Then there will be Group B that will be focusing on the coastal provinces. So in terms of the delegation here, we have not put in names of members. I think I'll need to have these names of members today so that, you know, we are able to send it to the team that will be assisting in processing logistics as soon as possible. So, and then the next one is the staff composition. Then probably we are going to have more staff members, both of the two groups as well. And then if you look at Sunday, March 2022, that's wherein we said, okay, we will start with the public hearing by traveling to the two provinces. The two provinces will be Limpopo and then KwaZulu-Natal. So, but what I'll do now, I'll just do the inland provinces, and then from there I'll come back to the coastal provinces. So on 7 March, the proposal is that, no, we will be traveling on a Sunday, and they will be traveling to Toando, and then on the 7th of March, then we're going to have public hearings there at Toando in Limpopo. And then from there, on the 8th, and then we'll drive on the 7th, and then on the 8th, we'll be in Nkuwankuwa around Tsanin area to have the public hearings there. And then on the 9th of March, we'll be at Krobelsdal to have public hearings there. Sorry, there. To have public hearings there. Yeah, Umalanga. Is to have public hearings there. Also, we decided to, in each province, to have three places that will be visited. Then that group will also proceed to Mpumalanga. One of the areas that we identify in Mpumalanga, which is on the 10th of March, is Mbombela. And then from there, we'll travel to Emelo. Then the other area that we'll travel to is Middelburg. From Middelburg, and then that group will travel to Gauteng. In Gauteng, on the 14th of March, we are looking at Randfontein in the West Rand. On the 15th of March, we are looking at Germiston which is around, it will be either in Fort Loras or Jamestown, but in that area at Uruleni. And then also in Tswane, we'll do one area, which is Hammanskraal. From there, that group will travel to Northwest Province, which on the 17th of March will be at Mahikeng. And then on the 18th of March will be at Swartrenek. And then on a Saturday, we'll be at Potchefstroom. After that, and then we drive back to Johannesburg, and members are going to be traveling to their constituencies. So if you check at the bottom here, we thought, no, after doing the 8 provinces, then the committee will meet in Cape Town and do the Western Cape as one group. And then we're looking at Khayelitsha, Citrusdal, and Mossel Bay. And then now I'll go back to the top. And then on the coastal provinces, we propose that we start with KZN. And then we do on the 7th of March, it's the same days, almost the same days as the one on the inland provinces. Richards Bay, it will be the one of the areas that will need to be visited. Pietermaritzburg, and then Ladysmith. From Ladysmith, then that committee will drive to Johannesburg and probably sleep over in Johannesburg and fly over to Northern Cape. In Northern Cape, we propose that we start with Upington. From Upington, then we drive to Kuruman, and then from Kuruman, then it will be Kimberley. So in other words, we're suggesting that we finish Northern Cape on the 12th of March, the same time that the other committee will be finishing Mpumalanga. And then from there, that group will also, although Bloemfontein is not a coastal province, but because it's closer to Kimberley, to Northern Cape, and then that coastal coastal group will also do Bloemfontein. And then on the 15th of March, we'll do Senekal. And then on a Wednesday, then that committee will do Kroonstad. From there, they will drive to Johannesburg and then fly over to the Eastern Cape. Eastern Cape, these are the areas that we suggested. That is King Williamstown, Craddock, and then Gqeberha. Then from there, after they finish at Gqeberha, then that committee will fly over to their constituencies. And then on the 22 of March, that committee will join the Inland Committee to deal with Khayelitsha, Citrusdal, and Mossel Bay. That's that, Chairperson. Maybe because before we have comments on this one, if I could go to the legislative program for the committee to process the electoral bill. Chairperson, with your permission.
Yes, proceed, Mr. Matonsi.
Chairperson, are people able to see the presentation?
Not yet, Mr. Matons. Thing is still opening.
It's still opening?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. Has it opened?
No. If you can click it again. No, it's not opening, Mr. Matons. I don't know.
It's not opening. Yeah. Adam? Adam?
Yes, Eddie, I'll try open it from my side.
Oh, okay, please.
Thank you, Adam.
Are you able to?
In the meantime, if you can boot, Minister. Are you winning, Mr. Matonsi and Adams?
Adam was trying to assist. Are you?
I'm trying, Eddie. Yes, just give me a second. I'm also trying to open it. It's just it's also slow for my side.
Okay. No problem.
I'm giving you 2 minutes, colleagues, to open.
Okay, Eddie, I can now see your presentation on the, oh no, wait, let me see. Can you see?
Okay. Yeah, yes, I can see it. Can you make it bigger?
Yeah, I can proceed, Mr. Martins.
Okay. Yes, so Chairperson, this is a legislative program to process this bill, this committee. So I'll start from the 8th of February. That's when the Minister of Home Affairs briefed the committee on this bill. And then the bill was advertised on the 21st of January. Then the deadline is the 21st of February. Then the presentation on the 8th. Therefore, we are planning to have here on the 1st of March to have public hearings. You remember we advertised the bill and then we asked for public comments. In that advert, you also requested that if there are organizations or individuals who would like to make oral presentation to the committee, they should be given that opportunity. So on the 1st of March and then also on the 2nd of March, that will be that chance for them. That's where that I've written national here because this is not provincial public hearing. This will be, public hearings that will be either held through a Zoom or maybe if there's a venue in Parliament, through in Parliament. Then the presentation that I presented previously, it says we are starting the public hearing on the 6th, which is traveling until we finish on the 25th of March. So those are the provincial public hearings. So the details for this provincial public hearing is the document that I presented before. Then on the 26th of April, we will request that the Minister of Home Affairs and the Electoral Commission will have to make comments on the bill, including the public hearings that the committee will have received from the 1st until the 2nd of March, as well as submissions, as well as a report on the submission that we have received and on the 6th of March until the 25th of March. So then the minister and the IEC will be afforded an opportunity to respond to that. And then on Friday, the 29th of April, we are looking at a consideration of that report, the report of the public participation that also includes the public hearing submission that we'll have received until the February, public hearings on the 1st and the 2nd, and the provincial public hearings. We consolidated one report that will be dealt with by the committee. And then on the 3rd of May is where we have to adopt. So the draft report will be considered on that date. Members will make comments, and then from there, on the 3rd of May, then the committee will have to adopt that report, and then also will give the Parliament Legal Service to comment on any legal or constitutional issues. Therefore, from the 6th of May, we start with deliberation on the bill. 10th of May, further deliberation. 13th of May, clause by clause deliberation. 16th May, consideration and adoption of the A and the B list. Then we are anticipating that the committee will finalize the bill on the 18th of May. So that's all, Chairperson, from my side. If there's any comments, then we are happy to take them.
Thank you very much, Mr. Matonsi, and your team for the work to demonstrate our readiness to interact with our people since the bill was tabled to Parliament and referred to the committee. Members, I'm going to invite you to comment or on the agenda and the proposal on how we're going to carry out our work. Then we close on the item. Honorable Lukwase.
I am okay, Chair. I will take you from what Honorable Eddie has just said, Mr. Eddie. I will follow with the program that has just been presented from us. I'm satisfied.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Ross.
Yeah, thank you, Chair, and hallelujah, my wishes have come true. Just one question from a meeting point of view. We have a quarterly schedule of committee meetings. So on the 15th was the Bushiri matter, on the 22nd was the one-stop border posts and the war on queues. So how will these meetings be fit into the schedule? Because we will be essentially every day out there, and I see that the meetings that have been scheduled there clash with the proposed committee meetings.
Thank you, Honorable Tito.
Thanks, Chair. I also agree with the program, but also with what Honorable Ross has said. I think that we must get clarity on that one. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kanyere.
Thank you, Chair. I have been covered by Honorable Ross and Honorable Dito. And in terms of the proposed program, I'm happy with it. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Ramalobe.
Thanks, Chair. Let me welcome the submission made by Edgy. I agree with the program, Chair. I don't have any further comments to it. I would abide by what has been presented. Thank you.
Fighter Ntswako.
I'm fine, Chair.
Fander Merve.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you to Eddie and his team for the work that has been presented. I think the idea of dividing us into two groups is also helpful, and it will allow us to, obviously cover the entire country considering our time constraints. I just wanted to say one thing. Often when we do, and I take this from the process that we've just gone through as the Social Development Portfolio Committee in looking at amendments to the Children's Amendment Bill, we went to many communities where the actual public hearings weren't well communicated to communities. So in fact, when we got to some of these halls, they were either empty or people were not fully briefed as to why Parliament are coming there. So might I just caution that if we, let's make sure that once we set or finalize this agenda, that we make sure that we communicate with community radio stations and those communities to alert them of Parliament coming to these communities. Because as much as we are undergoing a public participation process, we need to make sure that it's communicated to the local communities that Parliament will be there to listen to their issues in terms of these bills. So it will be important that we make sure that our arrival is communicated well in advance. And then I also concur with the issues around our current agenda. I think there's long outstanding items that are very important. There were a lot of issues around queues, immigration matters that were very prevalent over December. Those are issues that we cannot afford to leave behind. So we need to find a way of how we still incorporate our agenda or our current program with these public hearings. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Pillay.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I welcome the program of action and I support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Modisemta.
Thank you so much, Chair, and let me thank Mr. Eddy with his team for the work that has been done. At least it gives us a proper roadmap and a guidance on how we are going to proceed with the process of this amendment bill. Let me also agree with the members, or that we should take note that this is not the only work that the committee will be seized with. We still do have a committee program that we still need to incorporate and see how we are going to fit in some of the important issues or programs that we still need to attend to as a portfolio committee. Therefore, will not be seized for the next 2-3 months, in as much as it's going to be hectic and extensive work that needs to be done with this bill. But there are other committee work that will also need to look at. So I'd also want to encourage Baedi that maybe this program also still needs to be polished properly. It really looks good. It just needs to be polished properly, and let's consider some of the items that as a portfolio committee we will need to deal with, or we are still seized to deal with, Chair. But overall, I think I'm also satisfied with the program that has been presented in front of us. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other member I've not noted? Okay. Brian, if you can assist us with the comments that members have raised, particularly on balancing the scheduled work of the committee and the public hearing. And I didn't see that Western Cape members are splitting. What is the rationale behind for members not splitting to, unless I didn't capture it very well, Mr. Matons. Briefly, Mr. Matons.
Okay, Chairperson, the thinking was that there are nine provinces. So one group will do 4, then the other one will do 4, and then we'll converge in the Western Cape, and both the two committees then will do Western Cape. That was the thinking around that.
So the two groups in Western Cape are not splitting?
Yeah, according to the program so far, they are not splitting, unless if maybe, Chair, you have got some suggestions.
Let's look on that, Mr. Matun, so that we can able to finish the work and members get enough time. If we can look on how we can split them in Western Cape so that our work becomes easier, other members working on all the areas in the Western Cape, all of them. If we split, at least we'll manage to work towards meeting our time frame. Just comment on the issues that members have raised, and then we invite the legal team if they're here. Then we close the item.
Oh, okay, Chair. On the issue of the Western Cape, I've got the suggestion, because we are going to do Khayelitsha and Citrusdal, which Citrusdal is about 2 hours drive from here. So, and Mossel Bay, I think it's about 4 hours. We have to either take a flight from here to George and then you drive for 1 hour to Mossel Bay, or you drive from here about 4 hours to Mossel Bay. So my suggestion, if we have to split, if we can ask maybe one group that will be doing Khayelitsha and also do Citrusdal, and then the other group will have to do Mossel Bay, and then we're done. If that is acceptable, Chairperson. Then the issue of the program, if you look at this program is only for the processing of this bill to show when are we anticipating to finalize processing this bill in the National Assembly. So I'm thinking that some of the issues that we are going to be dealing with, let's say from the 7th of March, I think until the 29th of March, those issues will have to be moved over to the next term. The next term, I think, starts around the 19th, if I'm not mistaken, the 19th of April. So those issues, we're not going to totally forget about them. We're not going to totally forget about them. We're going to move them to the next term.
No, can we remote, Mr. Martin?
I'm just trying to check with this person. Oh.
Ruth, can members, can we mute? Okay, thank you.
I think
Mr. Martin, without disrupting you, there are administrative issues that you can deal with.
Okay.
Let's agree on the principle. And other issues you will with the team handle it. I think let's establish a principle that in the Western Cape, so that we're able to allow members to work, let's split them. Secondly, let's see how I can get your suggestion, but let's see how we balance the items, the urgent issues that the department has to come and report to us, that decision that the committee has taken, and members need to interface with that those program. I think Honorable Ross has highlighted some of the issues and other members. So let's see how we balance some of the items so that we get to department to account to the committee and parliament. I agree with the members agree on the framework on the issues that have been raised, both in the program and the sequence of our public hearing. Administrative issues, I think we can work on them. Members are approving the program of action, and the administrative part of it, you will handle it with other members. I'm sure members, I'm trying to summarize this item so that we don't take long. I want to bring in the department exactly at 10 o'clock. Can I invite
Chairperson, just before you close, it, still on base on this one, we need approval. We have been, the program, both program have been approved, but what we need is that the delegation to be split. We need that decision to be made today so that, like what Ms. Van der Merwe said, we should be sending this to public education. Then they are responsible for the issue of education, public education around those areas that we'll be going to. So the sooner the better if we get those names of members to split them. Thanks, Chair. That's all.
Okay. No, no, it's fine. We'll work on that. Thank you, Mr. Matunzi. Is there any other matter that the legal team need to advise us, the race on the process? There's Mr. Matunzi?
Yes, there are people from legal service led by Mr. Sivuen Jikela. So maybe they might want to comment on the issue of applying for extension. Mr. Jikela, if you're there.
Mr. Zvike, welcome. Thank you very much. Just briefly.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I've looked at what has been proposed now by Eddie, and I think I'm happy that it covers the whole period up to May. So I think that lays a very solid foundation for us to make the application for extension if the committee decides so. So from our side as legal services to proceed, we need a resolution from the committee or a direction that we can begin the process to do so. And Chair, I may just add that if we make an application, it will be an application on behalf of Parliament. So there has to be some kind of communication between the PC and the Select Committee, between the two houses. There has to be an understanding. Maybe it's a matter that we can deal with administratively, but I just thought I should make that point. But if we get your go-ahead, Chairperson, and the committee, we are happy to initiate the process. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Members, this issue you raised of a time frame and the intention of the committee to have an extensive or meaningful public consultation, and this program directs us that we may need to meet the deadline given that the NA has to deal with the process and also the NCOP has to interface with the process. Can we get an impression on this matter, then we're able to close it? Honorable Lukwase? Honorable Koche, Honorable Van der Merwe?
Chairperson, thank you very much. I think looking at this program that is in front of us, it's very clear that we will not be able to make the current deadline and that a lot of hard work lies ahead. It's not only the public participation process, but we also have to then bring the bill back to Parliament, finalise the changes, the amendments. It has to go to the NCOP. So I think I concur with the advice of the legal advisor. This gives a solid foundation for us to approach the court and to seek an extension. So I would really like to fully support us taking that avenue, Chairperson, that we approach the court for an extension on the basis that we want to justice to this task that is before us, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Tito.
Thanks, Chair. I agree also with our legal advisors that we must have our extension. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kanyile.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm in agreement with the two previous colleagues that we take a resolution to seek extension. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honorable Ruas.
Thank you, Chair. I'm covered by Honorable Kanyile.
Thank you, Honorable Tswako. Honorable Modise, Mza.
Thank you so much, Chair. I think there is a consensus, members are in agreement that we may need to seek an extension for us to be able to process this bill properly. So I'm in agreement that we must then give a green light as a committee to the legal services to approach the courts and seek an extension on behalf of Parliament. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Pile.
Chairperson, I want to second Honorable Modise. It is clear, given from our program of action, our itinerary, our schedule in terms of the process, we are going to require more time. And hence, as a committee, we should resolve that we make that application now, sooner than later. Thank you.
Thank you, members. We have solicited consensus from members to allow the process of the extension. The objective is to allow us space to consult with our people on the ground, political parties to make their submission. And you know that we're disrupted by the COVID process, disrupted by the local government elections. And the bill was tabled in Parliament on 10th of January. And we could not have enough time to deal with it. But we must appreciate the team that has worked on this bill led by the minister, but also must appreciate the work that the committee has interfaced. And we commit that all members of the committee, political parties, will be on the ground to interface with this bill and NGOs and interested parties, so that we enrich the and also consolidate all thoughts that will be contributing to strengthen our democracy and allow the independent to participate in our provincial and national elections. We are now resolving that one will approach the Constitutional Court with the intention to request an extension based on the evidence that has been will be highlighted by the committee, and also the legal service, once they've compiled the details, will then able to brief the committee. The secretary will brief us, give us a report next meeting on the how we've dealt with the issues of the private members bill, so that members then adopt a process forward. I want to thank you members, for interacting with this matter, and hope as we move forward, we'll then collectively work hard so that we meet and also we comply with the provision of the Constitution in terms of the task that we've been given. Mr. Matonsi, you will then look on how we're going to balance the work of the committee on the critical issues that the department has to account to the committee, so that we're able to discharge our responsibility both on the issues of the public hearing on this bill and also on the work that the committee has taken at least. I think there's a highlight of the critical issue of the ITs, of the Bushiri. I think Honorable Ross has highlighted that. So these are some of the critical issues that need to be taken into confidence in our people on the progress. We're standing off this item. And I'm going to invite the minister to introduce the briefing. Thank you, Minister Mtswaledi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, allow me not to appear on screen with my jacket on. It's extremely hot where here where I am in Cape Town. It's extremely hot. I can't have a jacket on. Yes. So, Chairperson, we are presenting to you performance and expenditure report for quarter one, quarter two, and quarter three of the 2021-22 financial year. I'm going to let the DG take you through the process presentation, but there is something important I want to mention. Time and again, when we present performance agreement, which are based on itemized programs. In other ways to say, we have got so many things that we want to achieve in a particular period of time. We have achieved this number, and this is the percentage achievement or the percentage non-achievement. Every time that happens, the committee asks a very pertinent and important question, whether the numbers of achievement and the percentages tally with what is being seen on the ground. In other words, if we say there were four things we wanted to do in a particular quarter and we have done all four of them, which is 100% achievement, do you see that when you go to the ground and visit Home Affairs offices? This is a question that is always in the minds of members of the committee. And we are accepting that is a problem. And the problem is caused by the fact that the biggest delivery in Home Affairs is to get in an office, get your document and go away within the shortest possible space of time. Be it the best certificate, be it an ID, be it a death certificate, be the fact that you want to get to go and get married, or you want to go and rectify your surname that has been misspelled, or to change your date of birth where you've been given extra years or your years have been reduced, etc., etc. You would like to go in quickly and out. And the biggest problem, which is always the elephant in the room, is the issue of downtime, which in the past week was even worse than we've ever seen. We have appeared here in front of the committee with CETA, and we have agreed on things that Home Affairs need to do and on things that CETA need to do. Some of them involves buying certain equipment, some of which we have got to get internationally to bring it here and improve our systems so that the downtime can improve. But downtime is not only affected by that, Chairperson. Even after we do that with CETA, there will still be problems if other things don't happen. The problems with the connectivity in the whole country. And I'm happy to announce that 3 weeks ago or so, the cabinet approved a program by the Ministry of Communication and Digital Technologies to do what is called South Africa Connect. The program involves connecting all sides of government and some communities. That means schools, clinics, hospitals, police stations, Home Affairs offices. They must all get connected. And what is that connectivity going to do to Home Affairs? One of them is an issue of speed, Chairperson. Some of the things the committee don't forgive us for are not out of our making. I've gone to many Home Affairs offices. You stand there and observe them serving people. In some offices, the queue is long and they serve only 4 people per hour because that's the speed with which the computer can work. I mean, in terms of the Wi-Fi, and they tell you that no, we can't do it faster than this. You have got to do it and you wait. Then the system is down or it doesn't show on the screen because of the speed of connectivity. And the Department of Telecommunication and New Technologies has promised us that that is going to, they are going to do. And every place in South Africa they pass, the systems will improve. But they'll finish that program in early 2024. But we are hoping to benefit earlier than 2024 in terms of the areas where they are going to pass. The second thing I want to mention, which will also help, is the in the long queues, is the digitization, which the president mentioned during the State of the Nation address. And I expanded on it yesterday during the debate. One of the things that happens in Home Affairs, Chairperson, is that because of this manual records we have, which I said number 300 million, starting from 1895, when people look for some of the services, we need the records, Chairperson. And going to work, I mean, to work through 300 million manual records to help a person, it's a very difficult job, and many people come many times. So the people you see there standing in long queues have been going to Home Affairs before, and they've been going many more times because they keep on coming back because they can't get what they want. For instance, when you want rectification, when you want change on your date of birth, when you want to change your surname, et cetera. All those things take time, and we believe the digitization project, which yesterday I said will give you information on the spot, will make sure that many people don't return many times to Home Affairs. That will also reduce the queues. So we are doing lots of things, Chairperson, in our power to reduce the queues. But for the moment, the most urgent thing is to buy the switches that we promised in the portfolio committee meeting when we came together with CETA. Buy the switches and whatever equipment, and if the committee wishes, because I know this matter is always in front of you, I can ask the DG to expand on that. What have we bought and what is that which you can buy, so that we don't keep on asking the same question again and again and again. And in recent days, Chairperson, there were even more people in Home Affairs than before. It's because in December, we went over time. If you remember, we showed you the timetable of working overtime, which means many more people were safe. And you are aware that if you are looking for an ID, when it's ready, a message is sent to you to come and collect it. And unfortunately, I have asked that messages must be sent to a certain number of people that will be manageable. But I've just learned that is because the messages are sent automatically. The system itself is automatic. Once your ID is printed, it sends you a message without the staff knowing. So there's a possibility that if you serve more than 100 people, it will send message to 100 people to come at the same time in the department. And we are busy dealing with that so that it's not automated, but it's made manual so that you can decide that today I'm calling only 80 people to come and collect. So those are some of the things we are doing in terms of downtime, Chairperson, but it's not going to be an event. It's going to be a process, but we are hoping it's a process that won't take very long to finalize. Thank you very much. DG, maybe you can go on with the report. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. Director General.
Good morning, Minister. Good morning, Deputy Minister, and also the members of the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs. I think I've already introduced the team. I think there was just one omission for Advocate Malagate from our legal unit. If we can then move to the presentation towards the end, Chairperson, if you'll allow me, I'll allow DDG Mabuso to speak to some of the issues that the minister has referred to with regards to how we're dealing with the issues around the network downtime, together with the CIO, particularly in terms of the appointment system that we've introduced, and also the progress that we've made with regards to the switches and the commitments that we made when we last appeared before you on the 30th of November. We've made a lot of progress with regards to the routers and the switches, and then we'll then come back to the other issues. So, Adam, if you're able to load the presentation for me, please.
Sure, DG.
Chair, I'll switch off the video because the connectivity is a bit unstable. I'm not sure what's going on this morning. So let's then proceed with the presentation to the committee. If we can have it on the slide mode, Adam. I think while Adam is sorting out the slide mode, we'll then move to the outline of the presentation. We won't spend a lot of time, Chairperson and Honourable Members, on the purpose, the vision, the mission and the value statement, because these are issues that this committee is familiar with. Similarly with the mandate and the outcomes, I think our key focus today will be on the performance for quarter one, performance for quarter two and three of the 2021 financial year, and then we'll then ask the CFO to speak to item number six, which is around financial information, and then I'll come back to deal with the issues that the minister raised around the challenges and then the way forward. So if we move to the next slide, the purpose of the minister has already indicated is to provide those reports for those three quarters. We'll skip the next slide number four. I think this is what the committee is familiar with. Similarly with the outcomes, so the committee is familiar with that. Now, if we were then to start with the quarter one performance, Chairperson, for the period under review, we had 27 targets that were planned for the first quarter of 2021-22, of which we were able to achieve 19 of that, translating to 70%. And then 8% its targets that were not, or 8 its targets that were not achieved, that translate to 30%. And the graphic illustration below, the bulk that's in green shows the 70% of what is it that we're able to achieve. Based on the legend that's on your right, achieved will be green, and then not achieved will be in red. So that's about 30% of those targets that were not achieved. And then on slide number 8, we'll then segment the performance program for the administration program. They had planned 14 targets. They were able to achieve 11, translating to about 79%. Three targets were not achieved. We'll come back to the reasons on all of them why some of those targets were not achieved. Citizen Affairs standing at 100%, which means they were able to achieve all their targets that they planned for quarter one. Immigration. Planned three, were only able to achieve one, which sits at 33%. I think that was the lowest performance for the period under. Are you able to hear me?
Yeah, Digi, sorry, let me just interrupt you. I've realized that the other colleagues who are here, Commissioner Laugh, if they need to be released, I'm not sure whether they will want to participate in this item. I did not indicate to them. Sorry for not indicating it to them.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. I will take my leave then and wish you all the best. Thank
okay.
you.
Enough. Sorry for not relieving you on the when we're finishing the item of the bills. Thank you very much, Commissioner Laugh.
Thank you, Chairperson.
No, thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson, for attending.
And thank you, Minister.
And your team. Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Pardon me for not releasing you at the time. I realize now that you probably stayed the whole day with us on the other item that perhaps you may not probably participate. Thank you very much, Commissioner Mashinini, Deputy Commissioner Laugh, your entire executive team who are here. For joining us on the first item of the bills. We count on your support and they will continue to support the good work you're doing, Chairperson. Thank you very much. DG?
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah. DG, you can proceed.
Well, thanks, Chairperson. And then the last point that to be made is really the performance around institutional support and transfers. That planned six targets were able to achieve three, translating to 50%. So overall, the performance is at 70%, as illustrated in the earlier graphic slide. And then on slide number nine, you'll then be able to see the actual APP performance in comparison, in particular for quarter one, 2021. 2022 and the quarter for 2020-21. So if you look at the previous quarter for the financial year 2020-21 for quarter one, Chair, you will recall that we were at the height of the COVID-19 pandemic, and there were a lot of things that impacted on our performance. Amongst others, it was the office closures, some services were not being offered, and the infection rate at that point was quite high, including in some of our offices where we had to close and did contaminate, and some of the officials were also infected. So we're sitting at around 29%, and 71% of targets were not achieved around that period. If we were to look at quarter one for the financial year 2021-22, we've turned that around. It's now 70% of targets achieved and 30% of those not achieved. So huge improvement, an increase of about 41% if you were to compare to the same period in the 2020-21 financial year. So that's the graphic illustration on nine. And then if we move to quarter two, on the next slide, Adam, it will then give you the overall performance for quarter two. So for quarter two, we had planned 30 targets, and then of which 24 were achieved, translating to 80%, and then six were not achieved, translating to six that were not achieved, translating to 20%. And the graphic illustration again shows you the pie chart that indicates that the bulk of those targets were achieved as standing at 80%. So that's a huge improvement from the first quarter. If we then segment that performance per program on the next slide, slide number 11 will then indicate to you that for administration, they were able to achieve 15 of their planned targets, which were 17, translating to 88. Two targets were not achieved. Citizen Affairs, planned targets were 5, and they achieved all of those, similar to the first quarter performance. Immigration Affairs, you will note that in the first quarter there was a dip. They've now gone up to 67%. Institutional support and transfers, including BMA, planned targets were 5, and they were able to achieve 2, sitting at 40%. Three of those targets were not achieved. And I think later on, Dr. Masiapata will then indicate some of the interventions that they've made to turn around that underachievement. So if you move to the next slide, on slide number 12, again, it's a graphic illustration of where we were in the financial year 2020-21 for quarter two. You will note that we were sitting at 59%, more or less the same reasons that we provided earlier for quarter one. And then 41% of those targets had not been achieved by the end of quarter two. If you look at the same picture for this same quarter, 2021-22, huge improvement of about 21%. 80% of those targets were achieved, 20% not achieved, if you were to compare to the same quarter in the previous financial year. So if we move to slide number 13, it gives you a comparison of how we've performed, Adam, between quarter one and quarter two. That's the slide that I'm referring to, which shows you that the department improved its performance by 10% in quarter two if you were to compare with quarter one performance of 2021-22. So if you look at civics for both quarter one and quarter two, sitting at 100%, IMS sitting at 33% and 67%. There's an improvement from 33% to 67% if you were to look at quarter one and quarter two. If you look at the BMA, 50% quarter one, and then they took a dip in quarter two, sitting at 40%. And then information systems sitting at 100% in quarter one, and now sitting at 67%. So those are the main areas of concern, the BMA targets and the ones for information systems.
DG, are you still on the line? DG? Mr. Matonzi?
Yes, Chair.
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, we lost the digit. Okay. Did you proceed? I think you had.
Can you hear me, Chairperson?
We can hear you now. Proceed.
Can you hear me?
Yes, proceed, DG.
Chairperson, can you hear me?
Yes, proceed, DG. DG, can you proceed?
And then if you were to look at quarter three, Chairperson, we had 28 targets that were planned. Can you hear me, Chair?
Yeah, we can hear you, DG. You are cutting. I'm not sure if you can...
Chairperson, can you hear me?
Yeah, proceed, DG. Mr. Matonzi?
All right.
Minister?
I was saying for quarter three.
Minister?
Chairperson?
Yes, I think they're struggling with the network. Did you Mavuso?
Sorry, Chair.
Yeah, I think we're struggling. I can't get the minister and the DG.
Okay, now let me then proceed. The DG will take over if he requires. So, Chair, the DG was indicating the overall performance for quarter three, which was sitting at 71%. Which obviously represents the 28 targets that we have. If you move to the next slide, Adam. Chair, this is just a breakdown, which obviously is represented in the pie chart. I won't spend time on it. You can move to the next slide. Again, this is a comparison between the previous financial year. I think one of the key lessons out of this one is that if you look at the performance of the previous financial year, was a reflection of the fact that we're still under COVID-19 different levels. We're still learning quite a number of things. So I think in the current financial year, a lot has happened. So hence our performance has increased to 71%. I think the coping mechanisms, the ability to perform, certain services, also bringing back a number of officials back to the office also, I think, contributed to that. Next slide. Chair, the next slide is just the comparison between the quarters. I think there was a bit of a dip in quarter three. If you look at quarter two, most of the branches, I think there was quite a good improvement. There were about four branches where there was 100% performance. But if you look at the third quarter report, there's three and there were areas that we indicated, about five areas where the errors show regression. I think we'll obviously talk about that particular regression when you get to the next slide. Chair, I think this one is just an indication of the three quarters that we have performed with quarter one having 70%, quarter two. So the comparison so that you have a look at a picture. But what we've done, obviously, as we are in quarter four, we're looking at how do we ramp up actually to even surpass our quarter two performance. Next slide, please. So, Chair, the next slide will just then go to the details, and I'm not sure if DG is back. This now goes to the details of the areas. What we would want to focus on will be those areas where there's not been any achievement. If the DG is back, maybe we can proceed. If not, then I can proceed, Chairperson.
Yeah, DG, are you back? Yeah, I think...
Let me try again. I've moved
to
another device. Can you hear me,
Chairperson? Yes, we can hear you now. We're now on program one. Thanks, DDG Mavuso, for proceeding with the items. DG, can you proceed?
Yeah, I'm not sure what's happening with
program. Yeah. No.
I think if you look at the first target there, 23, that's the annual target. Audible?
Yes, proceed. Yeah, let me so that we don't.
Chairperson, can you hear me?
Minister, can I draw your attention? Minister? We've lost the minister. DG, you must...
Can I then ask maybe DG Mabuso is in a better place?
Yeah, I wanted to suggest that. I didn't want to... It come from me. I thought... But I think all of you have a collective account to this presentation. DG Mabuso, can you proceed? Then the minister and the DG will respond or comment when members are intaking the report. DG Mabuso?
Thanks, Chairperson. I will then proceed with the presentation. Just to indicate that the first slide shows the three quarters, which is quarter 1 to 3, in relation to Program 1 targets. In this one, Chairperson, you will recall that we have developed a new system, which is a movement control system that is able to capture the biometrics of travelers. Now, what we are supposed to have done in the three quarters is that in the first quarter, we needed to have a service provider appointed to manage the process of procurement in particular, where we needed to get equipment that will deploy to the ports of entry. These include some of your scanners, but after we had concluded that particular onboarding, then in quarter two, we could not achieve the procurement of that particular equipment. Because when we received the quotations from the service provider, National Treasury had indicated that the procurement process through the work orders, we needed to ensure that the cost is actually reasonable. So we needed to follow a process of reasonableness in that particular regard. So we could not therefore achieve that target. So we then obviously, through the CFO's office, worked on that particular matter. And then only on the third quarter, Chairperson, we're able then to start the procurement process. We've had delivery of some of the equipment, but not all of it has been received. So that is a challenge that we have. So we're looking at now ensuring that in the new financial year, that particular target will be achieved because the equipment would have arrived. If you move to the next slide. The next slide, this one, Chairperson, was achieved. This is in relation to the e-visa module 2, so I'm not going to spend time on it. But basically what we want to do is that you will recall, Chair, there's about 14 countries now that has been activated on the e-visa phase 1. So the phase 2 was the development of other visa types that are going to be released into this particular e-visa phase 2. So those we needed to develop obvious specifications in that regard. So I think that part was completed in the two quarters. Next slide. Chair, the next slide is the asylum seeker and refugee system, which needed to be developed into live capture. So let me paint the picture, Chairperson. We currently have a system called the National Immigration Information System, which captures the information on the asylum seekers and refugees. But within that, we also have a case management system. What it does is that with deportations, the deportations team utilizes that particular function. So you needed to develop now, because part of the work that we want to do is to integrate our platforms so that live capture becomes everything to the organization. In other words, you're able to, on live capture, to do passport and ID. On live capture, you should be able to do asylum and refugee management so that you have one platform with multiple modules. So that was an idea behind this. So we needed obviously to ensure that we have a service provider on board to be able to do that particular work, because currently the developers of the live capture system and the support and maintenance is done through the SARS contract, which obviously it's coming to an end. So we needed to go to the market and get the service provider. So there was no appointment of the service provider in that regard, even though the user requirements were done. So we then could not obviously achieve that particular part of the third quarter in relation to the development. But there is some interventions that are being made through the CIO. I think when we deal with the questions, we will then indicate the progress that is being made. But basically, in terms of the way forward, that particular bid needed to be re-advertised through CISA to ensure that we are able to appoint a service provider to help us with the development of this particular live capture module of asylum seeker management system and refugees. The next one, Chair, is in relation to the bill. Chair, again, on this one, you will recall that there was a process after we drafted the business case on the repositioning of the department. We developed the white paper on the repositioning of the department. The next process, obviously, deals with the finalization of the bill. I think there are a number of issues that we still needed to consult internally. I do know that on the 17th of Thursday, we'll also be having a further engagement with the minister on the matter to try and ensure that we fast track this legislation, because the purpose of the legislation is to try and mitigate some of the challenges that the department is facing, particularly when it comes to a number of issues. One is the organizational design of the department, the issue of business processes, the issue of legislation governing the employment of officials of the department. As you know, Chair, that one of the issues that we want to be able to achieve is to work actually 365 days in the department in terms of expanding our office hours and ensuring that we also have a staff appointment in terms of the shift system, so that we do not have challenges in relation to payments of overtime, but we're dealing with the shift. You'll recall that we lost our Saturday time opening because of the issue of inability to actually enforce that shift system, because officials are employed in terms of the Public Service Act. There are many other benefits that obviously the legislation will give us, including our ability, for an example, generate revenue out of multiple processes, including our online verification system, which is able to bring additional revenue streams, which we have since lost during COVID. We lost our self-financing funding, which was actually able to propel us or augment actually in terms of the budget that we get from Parliament. So those are some of the challenges that I think the legislation obviously is going to help us to resolve, to say we'll now have an anchor legislation that deals with the pertinent issues in terms of how the organization is actually managed and how the future organization is going to look like. So those are some of the issues that we'll be deliberating on when it comes to the legislation. The next slide, please. Chair, next slide, it was on communication matters. Those were achieved. I'm not going to spend time on that one. Next slide. The next slide, Chairperson, this is the finalization of the official identity management policy, which needed to be sent to the JCPS cluster for recommendation to Cabinet. Chair, we have been to many clusters during quarter two. So the only one that we've sent to the JCPS cluster in December, but we couldn't have that particular engagement. Reason being that the meetings were rescheduled of the cluster. But in terms of the achievement of the targets, because ours was to submit to the cluster, so that policy was submitted. It's going to be deliberated on Thursday on the 17th when the JCPS cluster meeting is scheduled. There'll be actually four policies that will be going to that cluster during that particular period. Next slide, please. The next slide deals with the green paper. Again, Chair, on this one, the target was achieved across the three quarters, with the green paper having been tabled in various clusters. Again, it's going to the JCPS cluster on Thursday, as I've indicated. I think the most important part, obviously, with this one is that, I think the minister was able to, if you recall, Chair, we already had a white paper on international migration. But I think what the minister made us to refocus, to say these issues of citizenship, international migration, and refugee protection are interrelated, so cannot be dealt with in silos. Hence, we have developed this particular green paper, because now it brings everything under one roof. So we were seeking to go to Cabinet to request that we actually do go for public consultations on this one. The next one, please. Chair, the next one was the appointment of a service provider. This is in relation to the revised service delivery model. Chair, you'll recall that last year we did have a service delivery model that was approved by the minister, but there were issues that were being raised in relation to how we're actually proposing some of the changes within the service delivery model. So that work is currently undergoing. The team is sitting between today and the 17th, 15 to 17, to finalize that with an understanding that we will be able to finalize this particular and achieve the annual target by the end of the financial year. So there was a delay in terms of signing service level agreement, but I think everything is going well as we speak, Chairperson. So we are hopeful that we'll be able to achieve that particular target at the end of the financial year. Next slide, please. So the next slide is what we call a DHA access model, which needed to be implemented through the revised footprint. Chair, we did a scientific study in relation to our footprint as the organization to ensure that wherever we're located, there's full utilization of the services and the offices that we're running. So currently what we are doing, we're working through with Public Works and our property team on what we call a user asset management plan. Because what is quite important for any organization to have a user asset management plan that will drive its actually management of its footprint. So currently the work is being driven by the team within the branch that I'm heading and together with this property under the CFO. So we have achieved all the two targets. We're expecting that also by the end of this quarter four, we would have approved the user asset management plan, which obviously will then be submitted to National Treasury and the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. This also looks into the development of new facilities that are actually purpose-built. So that's what the plan will encompass. So we are on track with that particular one. Next slide, please. Chair, next slide deals with Okay, this is a process evaluation under counter-corruption. So they basically look at, they evaluate multiple processes to ensure that they are able to pick up if there are any security issues in relation to those processes that need to be improved. So their targets, all the targets under counter-corruption and security were achieved. Next slide. This also cases reported, this was achieved. Next slide. Again, this counter-corruption, they do threat and risk assessments. They've also achieved this particular one. They actually overachieved with 6. This is in relation to the vetting of the officials in the department. They also achieved that particular target. Next slide. Move to the next one. Then when it comes to civic services, I just want to explain, Chairperson, over the 3 quarters, civic services has been able to achieve the birth registration targets. What we did, we did for the first time, and we were the only department that was able to do that. We did what we call scenario planning. With scenario planning, we were able to indicate that when we are fully functional, these are the targets that we are able to achieve when we are on particular level 4, level 3, level 2, and level 1. So in relation to those particular levels and the calculation method that we utilize, which we have discussed it with the DPME and the AG, we're able to achieve that particular target on the 3 quarters. Next slide. These are passport targets, sorry, smart card targets that was achieved, Chairperson. And then the next one slide is deals with the passport ones. Just move to the next one. Yeah, these are different levels, Chairs, I've indicated under civic services. Next slide. Machine readable passports, Chairperson. So on this one, there were two areas that we needed to indicate that for an example, if you take the month of October, from the 6th, if you look at the third quarter on the left-hand side, from the 1st to the 6th of October, we were on level 2. Then the target was that we'll achieve 90% of adult working passport, which must be issued within 32 working days. That particular target was achieved. But from the 7th of October, when we're entering a fourth wave, we were changing the level from level 2 to level 1, we are not able to achieve that particular target. We only achieved 77.4% instead of the 90% based on this calculation method that I've indicated. So in terms of the way forward to try and improve, we ensured that one of the issues was the turnaround time in terms of the distribution of passport through Skynet. But there were methods that were being utilized, for an example, to ensure that the delivery of passport directly from the GPW to offices in Joburg and Tshwane Metro in order to reduce the turnaround times and be able to meet the target was implemented by civic services. But also there were issues relating to some of the passports that were stuck. So we did a lot of stakeholder engagement, also doing daily monitoring, particularly image enhancement, because Chairperson, while people take photos in the front office when people apply, We also have a process of image enhancement at the back office. One of the reasons is to ensure that every passport that comes out of the printing actually complies with the ICAO standards. Otherwise, you'd find that when somebody has got to travel, then those passports will not. So that's one of the areas where we monitoring quality. And also the monitoring of the exception reports so that we are able to find passports that are stuck at different levels of the production. Next slide, please. Chair, this one was in relation to the marriage policy. Again, this one was achieved. There's a lot of work that we conducted, and including, I think, our ability to go to the communities in about 9 provinces to deal with the issue of consultation on marriage policy. Next slide. These are the targets from immigration. First one was achieved on law enforcement. Next slide. Then the next one was on the 85% of critical skills visa adjudicated within 4 weeks. Chair, I think things started improving in the third quarter with the changes, particularly in terms of the adjudication processes, also recalling a number of officials to be able to come back to the office for adjudication purposes. So the target was at 85.3%. Next slide. Chair, the target also on business work visa was achieved in the third quarter. We started very slow in the first quarter, but the target was achieved insofar as the quarter two is concerned. So we are hopeful that we'll definitely achieve the 90% at the end of the financial year. Next slide. Next slide is institutional support and transfers. Chair, there's a new program that was established in the department. Particularly to deal with issues of transfers, but also the issue of the PMA being the only public entity that will be under the department. Because as we know that government printing works is not a public entity in terms of the PFMA schedule, but it's a government component. So with the PMA, there was the target around the incremental establishment of the PMA. So the targets in first and second quarter were not achieved. I think we'll explain some of the reasons to say there were issues that needed to be finalized, particularly on the implementation, finalization of the PMA and SAP's implementation protocol, but also the department needed to finalize the Section 97 proclamation with SAPs and other departments that are going to be integrated within the PMA. So as we are hopeful that we have then finalized those outstanding issues, but there are some of the targets definitely are at risk for not being achieved at the end of the financial year. Next slide, please. So in the third quarter, those were the first two quarters. In the third quarter, as we have indicated, what we had expected was that we start with the implementation protocol with the defense. So that implementation protocol was not finalized. So the discussions are still underway in relation to that. So again, the chairperson will be able to clarify. There is obvious action that we have with that on that chair commissioner and the deputy commissioners are working on, where the defense force has expressed their support for the PMA establishment, and that there is a joint task team that has been established to finalize and clarify areas of concern. And after that, the memorandum of understanding will be concluded, as well as the implementation protocol. Next slide. Again, the next slide just deals with the incremental rollout of the PMA in level ports of entry by incorporating all the frontline immigration and port health officials, including agriculture, to the department, to the PMA. Again, the first quarter and the second quarter was not achieved. So if we go to the next slide, which looks at the third quarter, is that currently, Chair, the reason again for non-achievement was that the rollout depended on the incubation of the authority as a branch within the department. Because it has not first been listed as an autonomous entity, and our expectation that will happen once the proclamation has been signed, and also it must coincide with the beginning of a financial year, and that obviously such the incubation will enable the secondment of border law enforcement officials from other departments, and as I've said, in addition, the issue of the transfer of functions after Section 97 has been done. So in terms of where what the PMA is to be incubated in the department as a branch, following approval by the minister and the DPSA,
and the discussion on the Section 71 to be concluded with relevant departments. Again, we are expecting that in the new financial year that work will continue to ensure that when we start the proclamation and then that PMA operates as an entity on its own. Next slide.
Chair, this one dealt with the five segments that we have been identified. Again, they have not been finalized. I think the issues are mainly the same, because there was an issue really regarding, again, the rollout of the border guard along the land border, obvious, which requires that we get support from SARS in various areas that have been listed. These include, obviously, HR capacity, existing operational guidance note, sharing of key infrastructure, because obvious that some of the infrastructure belongs to the defense, and then also conducting joint operations. So again, the issue of the task team that I've referred to in the previous slide is utilized as a mechanism to make this what called realizable or achieved. The next slide deals with the issue of the NTC National Targeting Center established with the establishment of an interim National Targeting Center. Again, Chairperson, these two targets, which is quarter two and three, were achieved. There were some glitches in relation to the implementation protocols in the first quarter, but we have now obviously achieved this particular target, that the interim targets have been submitted to ESCO for presentation. So that particular process has been finalized within the department. Next slide. Chair, this is the one of the policies I've referred to, which also we the fourth one, because the first one was the official identity, the green paper, the marriage policy, and then one-stop border post. Again, we are going to be presenting that to the JSPS cluster on the 17th. I think we've had a lot of consultations with the NEDLAG, within the cluster and the government, so I think a lot of work has been done in this regard. Next slide, Chairperson. So, Chair, this last slide, when it comes to performance information, just to indicate the analysis of the reasons of not achieving certain targets, we've indicated that we've had to observe COVID and health safety protocols where to ensure that we try and social distance. Also, the issue of the officials working on a rotation basis, because one of the risks that we did not want to have in a particular office during high level of infections was to have the entire office infected and then closed for a longer period. So the issue of rotation was therefore implemented by civic services. And also, as we've said, that COVID continued to negatively affect our performance for the period under review. The loss of productivity as a result of closure of offices because of the positive cases, the temporary closure of the missions abroad due to lockdown contributed to non-achievement some of the permitting targets. The front and back offices did not function with 100% complement of staff, and also staff members could not be substituted due to capacity challenges where offices have a smaller number of officials. I mean, we do have offices that have got four officials, for example. So if they are getting impacted, you're not able then to rotate anybody there. And also there were issues relating to lack of some of the engagement with stakeholders. I think we've talked about it, that affected the PMA targets. And also the delays in finalizing procurement by certain business units, some of which, as I've talked about earlier, which was around National Treasury raising issues of reasonableness and the huge dependence on other organs of state in finalizing certain processes. Chair, this is continues to be an elephant in the room, particularly when it comes to infrastructure issues with public works. And it does not only affect the Department of Home Affairs. We've had a lot of people who are sitting at home in other departments because of the lack of the space. And also, I think we are on record on some of the IT procurement process. And then also the continued loss of staff, because we are not able to fill all the vacancies when they become, when people resign, we immediately unfund that particular position because of the insufficient COE issue. So those are some of the issues, Chair, that we are faced with. I think the next slide, we'll then get into the financial information, which obvious as per protocol, CFO will just give us a summary of those three areas. And then Chair, I will then hand over to you and the DG. Thank you very much.
No, thanks very much, Mr. Mavuso, for for that presentation on behalf of the team. CFO Holambe, can you take us through?
Chairperson, good morning, and good morning also to the Minister and the colleagues from our Portfolio Committee. Chairperson, I'll try and do it very quickly, so if you allow me, I will just indicate the high-level outcomes of the expenditures as per quarter. Slide 56 gives the first, is at the quarter, at the end of quarter one. Chairperson, if you look at the total, the current budget of the department is 8.6 billion rands. That budget is split up into four programs. The amounts there are indicated there. Of the 8.6 billion rands, we have spent 2.2, and that translates to a percentage spend of 26.3%. That's the top part of the slide, Chair. Then we also have earmarked funds, Chairperson. So in the earmarked funds, we have Border Management Authority, the Electoral Commission, PNR system, and then WIO, as well as the Represented Political Parties Fund. So, Chairperson, that gives you the indication of the spend, 24% on the earmarked funds. Lastly, Chair, on the same page, self-financing. Self-financing is an arrangement we have with National Treasury where we have to collect the revenue, and then we can ask Treasury to allocate that money back to us through the adjustment process at the end of the financial year. In the meantime, we spend against no budget. Chair, so if you look at self-financing expenditure for the quarter one was 177 more. If I can then ask to move to the second slide, page 57. On page 57, I would just like to highlight the spending on compensation of employees at 25.1%. Chairperson, that 3.468 billion rand is our COE ceiling. So if you see at the end of quarter one, we were spending on a linear projection, we were over by 0.1%. Then, Chairperson, there are also high spending items under households. Chairperson, the committee is aware of the challenges we have with households and leave gratuities and people resigning. And then the other one, Chairperson, where there's insufficient budget under buildings and other fixed structures, the 72.3% high spending. Chairperson, slide 58, the provinces. This just gives an indication as to the spending by the provinces. None of the provinces were under pressure at the end of quarter one, Chair. They were all within linear. Chairperson, the next slide is slide 59, deals with our expenditure on COVID. We have allocated budgets for COVID. The total budget for COVID in the current financial year is 12 million rands, Chair. There's the spending on COVID has been slow, Chairperson. We were sitting with stock for sanitizers and fumigation equipment from the previous financial year. Masks, we have bought cloth masks and rather than disposable masks. So there's I think we are getting on top of COVID and how to manage it, Chair, in our offices. We also don't spend much money on fumigation. It's mostly done by donors. Chairperson, the next slide is just revenue. So revenue, as Mr. Mavuso pointed out, took a knock under the COVID dispensation. For the quarter, we collected 97 million rands. Usually we collect much more. Chairperson, the slide 62 is then at the end of September. I'm just going to point out there, Chairperson, that for that, at the end of September, we were on 55.2% spent. If I then can also ask just to move to slide 63, it's also 52.3% spent. Again, you can see that compensation of employees was under pressure. It's still under pressure, Chair. The expenditure on households were now at 192% spent, as well as buildings and fixed structures at 101.5% spent, Chair. So those households, building and fixed structures and compensation were under pressure. The provinces, again, Chair, at the end of quarter two, 58.8%. It's not that they were not seriously under pressure. The only exception being Limpopo, where they were already at 55%. Chairperson, next slide is, again, it's COVID spending. On COVID spending, we were sitting at 23.4% at the end of the second quarter on COVID spending. Budget of 13.9 million rand, Chair. You'll notice that the budget was then increased. Of that, only 3.268 was spent. Chairperson, we do the spending of the allocation on COVID funding is not earmarked funds. So we are at liberty to change that spending as and when we require it. So we'll also, we have moved and shift funds from COVID to cleaning services, for instance. Chairperson, slide 66, revenue, 178 million at the end of that period. If I can then go to the last quarter, Chairperson, this is at the end of December. Chairperson, at the end of December, we are sitting at 81.2% spent overall for the department. If we now look at earmarked funds, Chair, Border Management Authority had a budget of 120 mil. We have not spent significantly, Chairperson. According to this report, it was 0%. Electoral Commission, Chairperson, high, 87.8%, but that was because of the elections in the first and second quarter and the carry through of that expenditure. Passenger name recognition system, Chairperson, there was 210 mil allocated for that project, but we are not getting approvals to deviate. So it's unlikely that that amount will be spent, Chairperson. We need to extend a contract with the current service provider in time as well as in value. The represented political parties fund, Chairperson, that was dead on spent, 75% linear, and then wire was at 67.3% spent. Chairperson, the self-financing expenditure at the end of December is now 441 million. We have targeted 621 million rand as self-financing expenditure. So I believe we would be able to spend all our self-financing allocation and we would be able to recover the revenue we need in order to make the self-financing realize. Chairperson, the next one is just on slide 69 is the economic classification. Again, Chairperson, if you look at compensation of employees, under pressure, 79.1%. We started paying overtime, Chairperson, in December for projects in order to make sure that the IDs and smart cards could be delivered, passports, so that we do not have long queues. The overtime was a contributing factor to this. Goods and services slightly over, Chairperson, but that includes self-financing. So when we take out self-financing in the last quarter, that's the goods and services figure will look much better. You will now see that households is, the expenditure on households is 17 mil against a budget of 7 mil. It's 240% spent there, Chairperson, and the same with buildings and other fixed structures. 59 million spent against a budget of 23 mil. At 251% spend. Chairperson, the households as well as buildings and fixed structures, we will correct at year end, at financial year end requirements in accordance with the PFMA to make sure that those over expenditure is covered. We'll take savings from other programs and other economic classifications to clear that. Chairperson, machinery equipment was rather low, and then software and intangibles was sitting at 96% spent. The next one is just on the provinces, Chair. And again, Chairperson, you'll see that for the provinces overall, they are at 76.8% spent for the provinces. Some provinces are a bit more under pressure. Limpopo, again, at 81.7%. Chairperson, we try to support the provinces as much as we can, and we try to keep the core business fully funded. So we do not cut budgets when we cut budgets. We don't start with the provinces and core business when we cut budgets. Chairperson, the last one is just COVID spending. Chairperson, you'll now notice that the budget for for COVID has decreased. I've transferred some 2 million rands to a province to help them with cleaning services. We find that that's a bigger pressure, Chairperson, than the requirement for masks and sanitizer and cleaning fumigation. The cleaning services there's some pressure on cleaning services, especially in light of the staff shortages and the costs of just cleaning services in general, Chairperson, because we're now outsourcing some of our cleaning services. Chairperson, overall for COVID spending, 41.8%. I doubt that we will be able to spend the full allocation, so we will use some of the money that's left on this account to cover other over expenditure in other programs. We are also buying up stock and making sure that we have sufficient stock to take us into a next wave, should that be necessary. Chair, but we are reducing quantities because we do not want to sit with thousands of liters of sanitizer if it may not be used or if there's an expiry date attached to that. Chairperson, the last one is just on revenue collection. You'll recall that the self-financing expenditure is 441. The revenue collected at the end of December is 322 million rands. Chairperson, this 322, as well as the previous quarters, exclude the amounts paid by Durco. So if we add Durco, we will get to our revenues targets with ease, and Chairperson, we should slightly exceed it. So Chairperson, there is a comment there that if we go into a lockdown period, then our revenue drastically falls, because then we do not provide services that generate huge amounts of revenue. We do not prioritize the issuance of passports, for instance, and passports generate a significant amount of revenue. So Chairperson, thank you. That is my presentation. If I can then hand back to Mr. Mabuso or to the DG. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, CFO Holambe. DG?
I hope you can hear me now.
Now you're proper, DG. Now you're proper.
Okay, thank you. Apologies for the interruptions. Thanks.
Not at all, DG. We know the network challenges. I'm happy that you're working as a collective so that anyone can account to the presentation on behalf of the department. Can you proceed, DG?
No, thanks, Chair. I suppose the last slides are really looking at the challenges. If we can have the last slide, Adam, 74, challenges and priorities moving forward. Some of them, I think DDG Mabuse has already spoken to some of them. Slide number 74, Adam. So the last slides will speak to the challenge. DDG Mabuse has spoken to the issues around the long queues. Next one, Adam. Yeah, I think DDG Mabuse has spoken to the issues around what is it that we're doing with regards to the long queues, including the appointment system that has now been rolled out to a number of provinces in the Western Cape, where it's working quite well. Already in operation, Barak, Weinberg, Kailey, Chapal, and then the colleagues are intending to explore the rollout of the same system in Belleville, in Gauteng. Of course, we do note some of the challenges that they continue to experience. So that's one of the areas where we're piloting it, and Acacia and Limpopo, the colleagues are intending to pilot it in Jane Fest, Kroblasdal, and then in KZN, it's Tongat and then Ndwendwe. And the last one, of course, will be Eastern Cape, Lusikisiki and Mthatha, to begin to address this issue that you are referring to, Chairperson. And then with regards to the high vacancy rate, that's also indicated there, Chairperson, I think it's also important to report to the committee that I think Honorable Ross had requested us to come back at some point and present the business case that we had submitted to Treasury. And I'm happy, Chairperson, to report that Treasury has since approved an allocation of 266 million starting in the new financial year, which increases to 278 in the following year, and 2024, 291, to support us in terms of our capacitation to fill these vacancies that we've referred to. I think on the non-integration of IT system, this is something that we're working on. I've addressed the issue around the high vacancy rate with regards to unfunded posts. This is a matter that we're dealing with. In particular, the minister directed us to focus mainly on civics, immigration, and then we'll look at support functions such as IT, risk, and internal audit, so that we strengthen those control measures. I suppose the dependency on other organs of state for delivery of services, CETA in particular. And you will recall, Chairperson, that during the last presentation that we made to the committee on the 30th of November 2022, there were a number of actions that we were going to undertake, both ourselves and CETA, amongst others,
we had committed that there'll be an increased usage of mobile connectivity, which will be supported by suitable connectivity media, including the revision of architecture to deal with issues such as bloatware, where you'll have software with excessive use of infrastructure facilities and components. And CETA has indicated that they've already invested an amount of 500 million rand to address some of those IT-related challenges, which should be completed by the end of June. That should be able to start providing us with some stability. And then there were things, Chairperson, if you recall, that we committed to doing as the Department of Home Affairs, such as the replacement of routers and switches. And for this financial year in particular, we'd committed that we will replace about 30 of those routers and 30 of the switches. So for the switches, we have already replaced 26. We're on course to replace the last remaining 15 routers, so that should take us to 20. And then DDG Mavuso, at some point, Chairperson can then speak to how the rollout of the appointment system at some of these offices has been working. I think the last point is really around the ensuring that we continue to work irrespective of the load shedding, where we've provided a number of generators to offices to ensure that they continue to work. So let me then hand back to the Minister and the Deputy Minister and to yourself, Chairperson. Thank you so much.
No, thanks very much, DG. Thanks very much, DDG Mavuso. And opening remark of the Minister when he was introducing the presentation. We're going to members interface or interact with the presentation and comments on the issues that have been highlighted. The three areas which I want us to also deal with, Minister, one is on the on your achievement. I think you're highlighting that the counter-corruption unit has achieved. I'm interested if you can just demonstrate what you mean when the counter your counter-corruption has achieved in the department as the performance. If you can give us just a scenario demonstration in terms of the to qualify this statement. You know that we have called for the report of the this unit, which was presented last year, and there were many cases that were highlighted. So just want to get a sense as to whether to qualify the statement that you are raising is a performance. That I think is an important critical matter. The other point is that I'm sure that all of us were geared for this Border Management Authority and celebrated in its establishment. It's quite important that the report highlights that there's some of the delays in terms of transfer of functions and so forth and so on. So it's quite important to get a sense of the time frame on your engagement with the stakeholders or your team, your other departments, in terms of the time frames. It appears that the delays will contribute negatively to the work of the Border Management Authority. It's a critical area that we must ground our focus so that it achieves its the last on my area. I see CFO Holambe on the COVID spending page 71. I'm not sure whether the Western Cape and Limpopo are not covered, or perhaps if you can highlight the reasons why they're not covered. The last point is on the task team of the former Director General Lubisi. I know that in the interim space, we're going to receive a detailed report. I'm interested on the functions that were assigned and how it contributed to the performance, the issues that were identified by that team, and whether you're implementing those or what is the status quo in terms of the issues that they were appointed to do. I'm going to invite Honorable Tito, Honorable Kanyile, Honorable Khwase, Honorable Ruos, Honorable Tswako, Co-Chair Van der Merwe, Honorable Modise, and Honorable Pile to comment and raise issues which we have highlighted on your performance. In that order.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks for the presentation made by the Department of Home Affairs. My question will be on the second quarter, Chair, and then I want to know, under the staffing, what are the main reasons for staff attrition, and what are the measures that the department has been implementing to retain and attract that talent? And also, under the second quarter, Chair, which program has the highest vacancies, and how do these vacancies affect the overall performance of the program and the department? And also on that one, Chair, under the COVID-19 expenditure, I can see here that it has, on the second quarter, it has tripled from 1.1 million and in the first quarter to 3.3 million and then in the second quarter also. And on the issue of the elections, Chair, I just want a clarity from the department that can they explain to us how the mobile trucks were deployed in preparation for the local government election held in November 2021, and how it continues to deploy the mobile trucks after the post-elections? And are the mobile trucks on permanent deployment, or they are deployed on a need basis only? And Chair, I have seen on the second quarter, on the programs under the Citizens Affair, on the third quarter, under the Citizens Affairs, the DG has explained to us that there was a delay under the dispatching because of there were no beams from Skynet. Can they explain that one on us? And also, the CFO, Mr. Ulumbi, told us that under the cleaning equipment, they indicated that they were outsourcing them. Can he explain to us how did they outsource that cleaning equipment? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kanyile.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, we welcome the presentation by the department. And we note that there are some improvements on various areas or in the third quarter. However, I do have a few questions as well that I'd like to pose to the department. When the minister during his opening today, he mentioned that some of these targets, when you look at them on paper, the numbers, they look very good. But the biggest question that remains is, do these targets or do these numbers speak to the service delivery issues on the ground? I am raising this because we are normally getting a lot of photos, videos from members of the community, especially on issues of the long queue. I think the issue of long queue remains the biggest concern, even though the DG has actually touched on it, and also it has been put on the other slide as challenges. But one can't overemphasize that it needs to be addressed and ASAP. What I'd also like to ask, with regard to the appointment system, I'd like to find out from the department that the DG has indicated that it is working very well to the areas where it has been piloted already. When does the department plan to roll this appointment system to other Home Affairs offices across the country? On slide 27, the question that I have there is that what were the reasons for the delays in the evaluation of the tender being referred to? And also, I think in slide 29, there was a slide there that was referring to gender-based violence. I'd like to know what are the total budget allocation for the gender-based violence awareness sessions? And what we'd also like to know is that what is the current vacancy rate at Home Affairs offices? Though we understand that after a number of officials resigned or leave the office for various reasons, we have been made aware that those positions have not been filled for quite some time due to budget constraints. But we would like to know that at the moment, what is the current vacancy rate? Oh, okay. And I'd also like to know that how many offices are still working on rotation? Another thing that I would like to listen to get clarity on, especially from the immigration, I would like to know what is their turnaround time in terms of responding to applications that they have received, be it visas, be it permanent residence. Because to be honest with you, myself, my colleague Adrian, together with the staff that is helping us, we are at the moment working as an extended arm of the Department of Home Affairs due to the number of queries that we are receiving. And when we send them to immigration, we are not getting any responses. And some of the queries, they don't even fall within my constituency. There are issues that we receive from members of the community across the country. If they can just indicate to us what is their turnaround time so that we can have an idea that if we send a query to them, how long it's going to take for us to receive a response. Because some of the cases that we have referred to them, date as far back as 2018, 2017, but even us to date, we have not received any responses. With that being said, I'd also like to appreciate the civic services for all their cooperation, for all their responses together with the DG Tommy Makode, as well as Mr. Siyakoza. All the time when we are having queries that we direct to them, they do respond and they respond quickly. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kanyile, for your contributions. Honorable Pile.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My first one is just to check in terms of the status of staff that are working remotely, in particular to office managers. I think it's important that when there is a head in place, that it gives little space for anything else to be happening. So I think it's important for us to just know the status of that. I think the war on queues is something that we're going to hear continuously. It's something that we're going to see happening all of the time, but we must appreciate that the department has put in certain mechanisms into place and they're trying to improve on this. So Chairperson, I want to propose that the DG and his team will report to us in terms of the pilot booking system. I know they've mentioned it, but just perhaps at some point to come back and tell us, this is what has happened since we started the pilot. This is the improvements that we've had in terms of turnaround times, in terms of queues, et cetera, et cetera. And then, you know, similar to what Honorable Kanyile has just said, how are we going to then roll out? Because I think we shouldn't be piloting it up for too much, particularly because our offices are always busy. I think a month or two would be sufficient for us to gauge some kind of response or analysis and then be able to say, let's now roll out to other offices. And the faster we do that, the better it is for us in terms of how we're going to address that. I think I'm covered in terms of the COVID-19 expenditure. The funds on capital assets, there was a budget item there that was not spent as per the projected plans, I think in the first one. And in the second one says that the funds have been exhausted in the third quarter. And the question is, how will the department then fund assets in this last quarter if we've already exhausted that? Finally, the last thing, Chairperson, is we hear good stories about our mobile trucks. And yes, we are doing exceptionally well. We are reaching a larger number of citizens in terms of getting ID applications. The challenge is, and I think we've even heard Minister talking about collection of the IDs, how automatically you receive an SMS, it's ready, but when you get there, it's hundreds of people and you might have to be turned away, come back another day and you still. If we can develop a mechanism in terms of how we distribute these IDs, even if it's possible for those mobile trucks to go back to the area that they collected these applications from, makes it easier for us to then distribute those IDs instead of it sitting in our offices. And one of the things is that people do come.
but they got to come more than three times to collect one ID because of not being able to access offices. So I thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Honorable Ramlobeng.
Thank you, Chair. When you mentioned names, I didn't hear my name. I then thought possibly I'm taken out of the committee or I'm not part of the people that are supposed to speak. Chair, let me welcome the presentation from the Minister and the DG and officials in the Department of Home Affairs and greet all colleagues or members of the Portfolio Committee. Chair, some of the matters Honorable Pillay has touched on what I wanted to say, but a further emphasis on the track issue. And I'll base this on the basis of my previous employment. And I think the DG would know that there was a point where I would directly call them in an issues of tracks. I want to know, Chair, how are the mobile tracks being deployed towards especially the local government elections? How was that deployment process held towards in November towards the elections? And if the trucks are still being deployed even now post elections, and how are they structured? Is it a permanent basis of deployment of trucks, or is it on a need basis, especially towards what Honorable Pillay has made an emphasis on, towards the trucks and vis-a-vis the ID process? That was one. I think the most challenging thing with the issue of Home Affairs becomes the networks and the long queues or what CETA perceived to be doing and such. I think this matter, Minister, requires to be dealt with as a matter of agency. It can be not long in the Portfolio Committee, but every time I sit in the Portfolio Committee, there is one colleague that makes an emphasis on the long queues, the network issue and so forth. So I think there must be a way that the department finds a way out of this. If it's the IT system that is not working, let's look at it. If it's CETA giving problem, let's find a way of how do we navigate ourselves out of this. Because if this can be something that is continuously to happen even now. We require to bring services, and part of services to the community that we need to do is to make sure that there are no long queues, because if there are long queues, there is a certain point where certain people are then instructed, not necessarily instructed, but they are encouraged to go back home and come back early hours of the morning. You find our parents or even any normal citizen queuing from 4 o'clock to 5 o'clock so that they are first in line, and which is not correct, Minister and the DG. So I think we require to look at that. Another matter is, since the refugee centers have been closed since 2020, what becomes the utilization of the staff that has been working in those centers, especially bearing in mind the outcry of the department with a shortage of staff? How are we utilizing those colleagues who are working in refugee centers, DG? In the second quarter, you made mention, the report makes mention of the 947 vacant posts, and further makes mention of, in the third quarter, 998 mention of those vacant posts, which are funded from the report. When will this funded post be filled, or when is the process of advertising for this funded post will take place, so that it deals with that issue of the shortage of staff? Chair, I think mine, I would echo, I'm not sure between the first speaker and the second speaker who spoke, the issue of the good report that we've received as the committee, but becomes a vis-a-vis with the actual thing that happens on the ground. So I just wanted consistency on that in the next reporting from the DG. Thanks, Chair.
No, thanks, Honorable Ramlobeng. Apology, it was not our intention to suppress you not to participate. Honorable Ross.
Thank you, Chair. And yeah, thank you to the DG and all involved with the presentation. So firstly, I'd like to welcome the funding for the equipment upgrade in the offices to assist with the war on queues. I think it's probably one of our most important projects of this term, if we're able to succeed in going some way to win that war. But what I'd like to request, Chair, is that when we see the full report on the war of queues later on, I think we've seen expenditure in this regard. We've seen routers being purchased. We've seen switching equipment being upgraded, et cetera. I certainly don't see that, and it's not anecdotally in evidence at offices. You don't see that some of them are getting better. And so I think we really also need to see the impact of this equipment upgrade expenditure when we get that full presentation later on, just to understand what impact is it having, because it doesn't seem to be having the expected impact. Then, Chair, the staff attrition, I think it's quite a concern. It seems like the staff numbers are going down and down, while the amount that is spent on that staff remains the same. And so, you know, my question really here is, firstly, what are the reasons for these staff leaving? There seems to be a gradual decline in staff. Are there specific reasons for these staff leaving, or is it just natural attrition? And which department has the highest number of vacancies? You know, what is the impact of the staff leaving? Mr. Hollenby mentioned the paying of overtime can go some way to explaining why the staff numbers are going down, but the expenditure is actually over expectation. But that was for quite a short amount of time. So I'd ask the parliamentary question about perks and bonuses. And from that in combination with the annual report, it appears that in the last financial year, there were 8 people that were on suspension, and they received 1.1 million rand just in perks. Just in perks while they were on suspension, and that they are on suspension for an average of 442 days. That means that probably in that financial year, it could be that they weren't at work for one day. And I want to understand, how does that work? How can you be suspended so you're not at work, and then you receive your perks and bonuses? How does this work? Because I think if we, you know, as we go along, and if the minister is able to start implementing some of his promises of tackling corruption in the department, you're going to find that you have more and more senior persons on suspension. But I want to understand how these persons continue to get paid bonuses, continue to get paid perks when they are actually sitting at home. Then in terms of the institutional support, I think, you know, it's we've been pushing for the implementation protocols on the Border Management Authority. But we also see a pattern in Home Affairs. We see bills that take a long time to come through. We see policies that are delayed. We see procurement that is slow. And my question to the department is, what is being done to cut this red tape? Because clearly there are so many delays in terms of a protocol or appointing some sort of an advisor, et cetera, et cetera. So what are your specific steps, and specifically in the coming quarter, that you're going to do to start addressing some of this, what appears to be red tape that is slowing down your implementation? And then finally, Chair, I think I asked very nicely at the end of last year for the access model that the DG has mentioned, and it was promised at the end of last year and it wasn't delivered. So please, Chair, if we can get that today, because it's very problematic, Chair. I think we've asked for this many times, and I'm not sure why it's not been forthcoming, but this is essential for oversight. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ross. Honorable Zwago? Co-chair, Honorable Merwe?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you to the DG and his team for the presentation. I think we've all spoken at length about the issue of the war on queues. I'm not going to belabor the point, but Yeah, I do think, you know, especially over the December period, one was inundated with complaints from various offices in terms of what some describe as dysfunctional home affairs offices, people waiting for hours on end, not being able to get the assistance that is required. We're also confronted with stories of people having to pay bribes in order to get the documentation that they need. And even these type of businesses that are now being run where people queue for other people in order for them to be able to access the services that they need to get from Home Affairs. And really, we need to get to a point, hopefully, in this year where these situations don't prevail anymore. But Chairperson, I've got a problem in terms of, and the Minister alluded to it, and I thank him for speaking to this issue, but it's, again, the issue of the disconnect between what is represented here in the slides and the lived reality on the ground. Now, the presentation again speaks to an immigration inspectorate or an immigration unit that is performing or overperforming. We look at the immigration inspections done, and consistently there's an overachievement in this regard. However, Chairperson, we are now in the midst of a full-scale immigration crisis in South Africa. It's an issue that is in the public domain. You've got organizations now themselves conducting inspections at establishments where undocumented or illegal migrants are operating either businesses or selling items or even working at establishments. So we really, for me, the disconnect between what is in the presentation and what is the lived reality on the ground is very stark, because on the one hand, you've got South Africans saying Home Affairs is failing us in terms of implementing its own immigration laws. And on the other hand, you've got a presentation here today that speaks to an immigration services or a unit that is doing very well. It's overachieving its targets. So really, I think, you know, it worries me, because we can't sit in the middle of something which really bothers South Africans, that they feel that, you know, immigration is a problem, it's a national crisis, it's something various organizations are speaking to, but we've got a presentation that says Home Affairs is doing really well in this regard. And I would really like to ask, what is it that we're going to do going forward to ensure that the immigration branch and the immigration inspectorate actually achieves not only on paper, but in reality? Because the reality is we don't have a border management authority at the moment. These issues are pressing. They are of a concern. And so I think it also goes to the issue of the counter-corruption unit, which you spoke about. Again, in the presentation, we are told that the counter-corruption unit is doing very well. But on a daily basis, we are confronted with the issue of fraudulent IDs, fraudulent permits, fraudulent passports. Just the other day, a building was found in Johannesburg where many documents, ID documents, fraudulent documents were found. And so there's a disconnect between clearly what is reported in terms of successes and what we are seeing on the ground. So that worries me, firstly, Chairperson, and I would like to get, you know, just the views on how do we align what we see in the presentation with what is happening on the ground. And then in terms of the asylum seeker and refugee management system, that live capture tender that is outstanding. I think it's a long outstanding matter. I think it's something we spoke about previously, the ability not to find a service provider, I think was reported to us previously. So I would just like to know in terms of what is the difficulty in finding a service provider here, and where are we in terms of concrete timeframes to get a service provider to help us? I also noted that there was discussions with the UNHCR in terms of assisting the department to manage and its asylum seeker system. You know, maybe just an update in that regard. I also wanted to know what is the current backlog as of today in terms of our asylum seeker backlog, in terms of the applications that are pending. And then, you know, the issue of the BMA remains for me a very big concern, Chairperson. I did say so before, but really it's moving at a snail's pace, and we can't really be blaming the department, because again, we are sitting with a situation where SAPS and SANDF and others are not coming to the party. So my question really then becomes, is this really the BMA getting the necessary attention that it requires? So there's an establishment of a task team, but is this task team going to move with speed to ensure that we finalize the draft memorandum of understanding, the implementing protocols? And when do we envisage these protocols to be signed and finalized? Because, you know, it feels like we just keep on kicking the can down the road, and the BMA really is something that must be expedited. For me, you know, the two issues that are for me of most importance, not only the issue of queues, but the immigration crisis, the BMA, and it's very, very important that we start moving and not come back to the committee each time with the same issues that are not being resolved. And then finally, on the issue of the mobile trucks, I also wanted to say thank you to the DG, because he's always available to assist us to get these to our communities. But just to remind the department that if they could make available to us the schedule of where these mobile trucks will be, so that we can actually make that available to our constituency. Thank you so much, Jefferson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Van der Merwe. Honourable Mudisem, sir. Honourable Lokwase.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I would not want to overemphasize what have already been said pertaining to the BMA. But my short question would be that from all the delays that you and Honourable Van der Merwe has mentioned, according to the department, are these delays not affecting the operations or the timelines to operationalize the BMA? That's the one question that I want to know, because I think for now progress should have been made and it's not yet made. The other issue was mentioned by Honorable Molobeng, but my interest would be from the 988 vacant posts, how many will be addressed by the 266 million from Treasury that is being allocated from Treasury for the next financial year? And would also want to know from the department, how have they prioritized this post? And is it possible for them to categorize this post or the identified post according to their span of control? To say from their identified posts that have been funded, this much will be for middle management, how many will be for senior management, etc. And my final question, Chair, would be, or my request would be to get a proper explanation on the exceeded expenditure on capital assets that is explained, that needs to be explained to us. And one would want to know which budget item was compromised in feeding to this capital asset expenditure. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, honorable members, for your comments. I have requested comment of Honorable Zwako and Honorable Mudisimza. I think maybe they are struggling with the network, but if they are back, they can indicate before I invite the minister, the DG, and the team to respond. Okay.
Hi, Chair.
We're good. Oh, Honorable Zwako is back,
yeah. I think that mine will be to look, man, with the department, but the issue of the processing of the queries, we do send some queries to the department. The person responsible, I forgot the name, Bangbana. I know he's responsive, and we do submit, and he acknowledges. But it's just that maybe there's an overwhelming on the side and everything. We don't need to check, man. What is the turnaround of all those queries that we are sending on the ground on the issues that we find? And then also the department, also, man, they need to check the issue. I think I agree with the other members. The issue of the queues is still an issue. In majority of the department of home affairs that have been and have checked the issue of the queue, I think that maybe there must be, man, a special focus or a thorough, I don't know, maybe some kind of a proper wall to really deal with this issue of the queues, because you know, it's so sad when you see them, the people, like, you know, they just queue even outside, and it's so hot in areas of, you know, Jane Fairs, there. Areas like that, in the villages of Limpopo, in all those areas, it's very, very sad. And then also when I called home as well. So this issue of the queue, I think the department must reflect on it, must just sit down and just deal with it. I see all the other issues, and that are out there, you know, but this one of these queues, I think that is very sad, and we need to get to ensure that at least we come to a point where we think that these queues are going down and all of that. Okay, I know that it's not saying, no, people are moving from here, people are leaving this area to go to this area, but it's just that in a sample that I take, there being a village or in town, you find that there's a queue outside. So the department can just have a look and see what they can do there. Thank you very much, Chair. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Honorable Twako, for your comments, and all members for your contributions and comments to the issues and the way forward you have provided. I see the hand of Honorable Kanyile. Things you want to raise, Honorable Kanyile?
Chairperson, thank you so much. I do apologize for coming back again. There's just one question that I forgot to ask to the department. We have been getting a number of concerns in various Home Affairs offices. Apparently, another thing that causes the long queues, the allegations that there are members of the community that make their appointment through the security officers at the gate the previous day. So if a member of the community will come on the following day, even if they can wake up at 4 to be number one, you find that when they finally open the door or the gate at 8 o'clock, you are number 26. And there is an office in Northwest, I forgot the name, I'm going to double check the name, I'll send it to you by an email. Apparently the security officer there, he takes IDs. So he will keep the IDs, maybe about 26 or 30 of those IDs. So if you arrive in the morning, whether you were there from 5 o'clock, it will mean when you enter, then you are number 81. You are going to follow all the people that have left their IDs there. I'm not sure whether there are issue of bribery there and all of that. What I'd like to find out is that does the department think there's anything that they can do to try and deal with this situation? I know I have raised it a number of times, and I have been advised that if members of the community are asked to pay a bribe, they need to open a case. However, I kind of feel like that action is a reaction. But now that we know that there is this culture where people are being made to secure a slot by paying a bribe, what are measures can the department put in place to ensure that this thing does not carry on or does not continue to happen? Thank you so much.
No, thank you, Honorable Kanyile. Members, you don't need to apologize for making a follow-up or coming back, because this is your meeting for department to account to the committee on the work that you're doing. I just wanted to rescue you, Honorable Kanyile, and other members, that we ought to not to apologize when we want to make follow-up or raise issues after you've considered another view that you want to contribute to. I'm going to invite the Director General to respond to the issues he will delegate. Then after, invite the Minister to make comment, and we then close the item. Director General, then you'll work on your delegation. Then after that, we'll invite the Minister to make comments and response on some of the issues that are raised. DJ?
Right. No, thank you. Thank you so much, Chairperson, and thank you to the honorable members for the questions that we posed. I'll request in the following order, DTG Moizi to speak to issues around counter-corruption. What is it that has been achieved? The questions that you posed, Chairperson. And then the question that you posed, Chairperson, around the transfer of functions for the BMA, and issues around how we engage stakeholders. And similarly, the same question was asked by Honorable Van der Merwe around the protocols. Commissioner Masiapato will be able to speak to some of those issues, including the timelines in terms of how we're planning to operationalize the BMA. And then with regards, Chairperson, to some of the questions that were asked by Honorable Tito, I think DDG Segama will be able to speak to the issue around the deployment of the mobile trucks. Honorable Ramundo Beng also asked a similar question, including the issues around how Civics is able to assist. And then Honorable Kanyile, with regards to the questions around the vacancy rate and I think they are mainly HR related. I'll ask Acting DDG Madam Pane Molefese Fanyetso to respond to some of those issues. And then you then asked another question around the appointment system. DDG Mavuso will then respond to some of those issues. But I think of critical is to ensure that while we have rolled out the system, I'm trying to respond to the question that you've asked similarly with the Honorable Pillay. So while we have rolled out the system, the first task that we need to do is to ensure that the system is optimal in terms of its usage, and then it drives the required stability before you roll it out to the other offices. And I think we do take the proposal that perhaps we need to look at how to roll it out to the other offices. Honorable Kanyile, you asked an issue around rotation. That is historical now. Staff members are back at 100%, except, of course, those with comorbidities, as indicated in the directive that we have received from the DPSA. Of course, those with comorbidities are catered for separately. Honorable Ramulubeng, you also asked an issue around the RROs. And I think I need to bring this to the attention of the committee that the online services, which also require back office support, is continuing to function. And to date, we have managed to process close to 155,000 applications online that have been completed. And we're working towards opening the offices sometimes in May. But in addition to that, you'll recall that there's work that's being done by the UNHCR and our team at RASA, the more than 30 lawyers that have been employed to deal with some of the issues related to asylum seeker and refugee management. Those are being dealt with. DDG McKay will be able to expand in terms of the process and the plan towards some of the issues that you have raised. And then DDG Segama will also speak to issues around the war on queues together with the CIO. And then I think I need to then hand over to, let me then start first maybe with DDG Moetsi before we then hand back to the minister. With regards to some of the issues you've raised, Honorable Van der Merwe, we've received similar concerns around some of the people booking spaces in some of the offices, similar to the issue that Melukwasi raised in some of those offices. And counter-corruption has been able to go to some of these offices underground to look at some of these practices. And I think DDG Moetsi will be able to respond as to what is it that is being done to deal with some of these issues. I think there was a question that was asked with regards to the split in terms of the positions, the vacancies or the bid that we have made to Treasury in the business case. From our own understanding is that the areas that are mainly impacted, Honorable Van der Meer, we are around immigration, and therefore the bid is biased towards civics and immigration, and the funding therefore will be to fill vacancies. And if you look at the business case, the bulk of those positions will be for people that will be working in the offices, for your inspectorate team to deal with the issues that you have raised, Honorable Van der Meer. And the split is around, I think for civics it was sitting at around 350. DDG HR can correct me, and then for immigration, I think it was a bit more around 428. And then there were just one or two other positions for support functions, such as risk, internal and internal audits. So let me then request DDG Moetsi to then start with the responses before we hand over to the others. Through you, Chair. Thank you.
No, thanks very much. DDG Moetsi.
Thank you. Good morning, members of the Portfolio Committee, Honorable Minister. Thank you, DG. On the issue of our achievement, Honorable Chairperson, our target is 50% of reported cases of fraud and corruption to be finalized within 90 working days.
And the target has been achieved. We have achieved 66% of that. We have received 89 cases and finalized 59 and referred 19 to employee engagement. And we have a few that is pending there that we treat as backlog that is on the target of cases. And on this one, I would like to say that we are dealing with this matter in an integrated approach because we have realized that most of our cases that are coming, we deal with our officials. However, there are syndicates that are corrupting our officials from outside. When we deal with this one, they corrupt others. Now, we are approaching this in an integrated approach where we have law enforcement and also internally, we have our analysis team that are looking into cases that we're receiving to really go deeper to check what are the root causes of this case and what really happened. For now, we have finalized the evaluation on the passport system, checking what are the challenges, why are we having cases in that space. We are working now with the implementation of the recommendations that we have made to close the loophole in the passport process. And our other challenge is the IDs. The cases of IDs also keep on skyrocketing. So we have a team from our analysis that are working on the passport process to check the challenges that we are having in the passport process, in the ID process, while also really working with law enforcement on proactive mechanisms. We're dealing mainly with reactive where we are getting cases, proactive with law enforcement and also proactive with looking into our system to say what are the real causes of this corruption that is coming. Because as much as we are dealing with cases, they keep on coming. Now we want to say, let's close the loopholes that we identify and ensure that we have watertight controls in our system. So that is what we are doing, Chairperson. And on the vetting, we have also achieved the target. We're saying there that for quarter three, we're supposed to deal with 75 vetting. The team has completed 94 vetting files, which have been referred to state security agency for finalization. And we are really getting good support from state security for now after interventions from the DG and us meeting with the delegation from state security. There is really good progress. And also on cases that we are referring to the police, we are getting good progress, and also the projects that we are running with the police to deal with the syndicates, it's also going on very well. From time to time, we meet and see check the progress, and it is really going well in that space. So on the issue of security in our offices where they are said to be taking bribe, we had also law enforcement assisting us there. We have been going there disguising and checking what is happening. And the main problem really, especially in offices like the Pietermaritzburg, so there's a team that is working there because we had, for instance, car guards that would be sleeping in our offices in some instances from the very early in the morning, booking queues. However, we are working with law enforcement and also our security officials to ensure that we kept this trend. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. DG, who's next? Commissioner Masiapata?
Yes, Commissioner Masiapata is next, and then we'll come back to the others.
Yeah, no, thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thanks to the Minister, as well as to the committee members. Maybe just to start, Honorable Chair, in responding to the question, firstly by indicating that as per the presentation that we've made to the committee during the course of, I would say, December, we are on course, particularly in line with the timelines that we had reflected to the committee towards the operationalization of Border Management Authority. And therefore, I just want to contextualize the first point, Honorable Chair and committee members, that because we were presenting the delivery metrics within the context of the APP, as it were, there has been some reflection on the basis of other quarters. In other words, quarter one, quarter two, and a bit of, obviously, quarter three. And of course, some of the articulations there are as the status, as it were, at the time, as per the quotas, as it were. So we couldn't change the report, as it were, on the basis of the pointers of the current status, as it were. So what I want to just say, Honorable Chair, firstly, I did note that the issue of BMA has been raised by three committee members. Firstly, by the chair, as well as the Honorable Ruos, Honorable Van der Merwe, and Honorable Lekhwase. So I want to first indicate that the committee should not necessarily, be worried about the operationalization of the BMA with the view that maybe there are bottlenecks. I want to just give a quick status in terms of where we are and actually re-emphasize the timeline so that the committee members will definitely be assured. One, where we are now within the context of all of these issues is that we have at least managed to engage with National Treasury, and they had actually, given us around 73 million, which is then going to allow us to basically bring in, the first cohort of staff complement into BMA, and that is going to be happening as per the projection in the current quarter four, as it were. In this instance, we are going to be bringing on board around 200 of the border guards, and we are going to bring on board 35 of the support staff. And therefore, the issue that we are waiting for now, the minister has already approved the transitional structure of the BMA, which is then operating within the Department of Home Affairs as a branch. And in that context, we are then awaiting the signature of Minister Dzodzo, which is the Minister of Public Service and Administration, which is then going to be what authorizes us to start with the advertisements. So we are on course in as far as all of these issues are concerned, and we don't necessarily, up to this point, see any major bottleneck. Maybe just to emphasize around the issue of possible bottlenecks, the Border Technical Committee has actually met, as reflected a bit in the previous, in the latter part of December, and all that. And the Border Technical Committee is basically a team of DGs chaired by myself. And out of that, we are not able to identify any DG who seeks to present any kind of a pushback in terms of operationalizing BMA. Similarly, the Interministerial Consultative Committee chaired by Minister Motsoaledi, he had actually met twice together with his colleagues. And therefore, even in those engagements, we are not able to identify any pushback in terms of operationalizing the BMA, as it were. Therefore, where are we in terms of timeline? This is very critical for the committee members to follow through so that whatever that happens in between should not necessarily be considered as delaying the process. Number one, when it comes to the issue of the implementation protocols, we can confirm that the implementation protocol between BMA and SARS had already been signed by myself and the Commissioner of SARS. So that one is off the way, everything is set. Two, the implementation protocol between BMA and the SANDF had actually been concluded, and that is where the task team wait actually came from. We are just waiting for the Secretary of Defense and myself to sign that particular document. The only thing that we are waiting for is for the Military Command Council to receive a final presentation on the protocol before we do the signature. The one that we are currently busy with is the one with the SAPS. That one is still on discussion, and we are believing that we will have that implementation protocol also signed before the end of the current financial year. That is where we are in as far as those three protocols as defined in the Border Management Authority Act, as it were. In terms of the issue of Section 97, Honorable Chair, I can also confirm that the Section 97 between, the Department of Home Affairs or the Minister of Home Affairs and the one with agriculture has been finalized at the technical level. We are just going to allow the ministers to sign. So that is the agriculture one. In terms of the one on health, as well as the one on public works, those two are at advanced stages, and therefore we are going to get all of those issues implemented as soon as possible. So that is what I thought I just needed to reflect on. But lastly, Honorable Chair, around the timeline, which is the most important issue. One, I want to confirm that as BMA assisted by the department, we have already engaged with labor firstly at the departmental level, that is the Departmental Bargaining Council, and we are going to be engaging with the Public Sector Coordinating Bargaining Council in the coming few weeks. How we are going to handle the transfers, the honorable members, is in this manner. Number one, in terms of the immigration staff, that has already been concluded because the Minister of Home Affairs had already written a delegation from the department to Border Management Authority. But we cannot just in the middle of the financial year, even in the middle of the quarter, say that the immigration is pushed into BMA. That is going to then cause an administrative confusion. And that is why we are saying on the 1st of April this year, which is in the next few weeks or so, all those colleagues are then going to, firstly, the functions of immigration are going to move into BMA, and then the staff is not going to be transferred. What is transferred is the function, and the staff is going to be seconded, and then the budget is going to be reinforced. That activity will happen in terms of agriculture as well as in terms of health. Why are we doing it that way? We do it that way because from the 1st of April now, the transfer of functions, the colleagues must then do the work as seconded, remaining in the payroll of their mother department, and also in terms of making sure that there is no any disruption of conditions of service. Whilst in the period waiting for the 1st of April 2023, we are then going to do all of the activities that are to establish BMA under incubation. Those things include having to make sure everybody's vetted, so that we can be able to know these are the people which will ultimately be BMA 1st of April 2023. So that is how the model is moving. And of course, we are also making sure that labor is brought on board as we move on all of these activities. So let me stop there for now, Honorable Chair, just to indicate that according to our timeline, BMA is on course and we do not see any bottleneck, as it were. If there is to be, it will be escalated to the ministers, and they will intervene. And of course, if there is anything, we will definitely brought those issues to your attention. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Commissioner Mashiapata. DDG Sigama.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Thanks very much, Minister. Honorable members, thanks very much. Thanks, DG. Mine is on the distribution of mobile trucks and how they are deployed throughout the country. Chairperson, I must indicate that we do have a hybrid model across the country. The first part is when we've just a plan to have outreach programs throughout the country. Those ones are published in our ops plan, which is our personnel plan. So each province has got a published a plan, which is known by the communities, including stakeholders. So that's one area where we then make sure that we achieve our target as indicated in our ops plan. So each province has got a plan approved by the DG, wherein we are able to monitor that. The second level of planning in terms of our mobile trucks is based on our elections, as it was alluded to. These are special projects wherein we also set aside mobile services, particularly at the head office level, which then assist us, Chairperson, in terms of having some kind of rapid response where there are either disasters or there are a dire need of mobiles in those specific areas. So we will then work on that based on requests that are sent to DG. DG will then channel them to the branch so that the branch can start to prepare accordingly. So that's the second part, Chairperson. The third one in terms of the mobiles is where we've got engagement with the schools. As you are aware, Chairperson, we've got our partnership with the Department of Basic Education, wherein annually we try by all means to make sure that we assist those that are in dire need of our enabling documents. And by enabling documents here, I'm referring to birth certificate, IDs, passports, and so on and so on. So there are arrangements that are made between the Department of Home Affairs as well as Basic Education to make sure that we then service those learners that are at schools. Then we have got programs with school principals coordinated by our stakeholder forums members who then indicate according to their schedules when are the learners available so that we then make sure that they receive their documents without disturbing learning at various schools. That plan, Chairperson, is across the country. Each province has got a schedule which is then shared, chaired by the chairperson of the stakeholder forum, coordinated by various principals at various levels. So we also report back to our principals in terms of performance that has been made through such initiatives, chairperson. Then the last one was around long queues on what is that civics is doing as a branch. As you are aware, chairperson, we are working as a collective here. There are various role players. We also have support units that support us throughout. We've got our IT, we've got our institutional planning and support that works on channels, IT assisting us in terms of systems. But from our side as civics chairperson, we have made some strides internally, wherein as and when clients are inside the office, we are able to channel them directly to where they are in need of our services. And we have segregated all our products. You will see when you are inside our offices, if you are to apply for an ID, there's a dedicated line right inside. If you are to collect, there's a dedicated line. If you are to apply for birth, marriages, and death, we refer you to a particular queue while you are inside. However, chairperson, the major challenge is when you are outside. That's where we were in need of other initiatives so that we then also address the issue of queues while you are still outside before you can even enter the office. So what we did here, as DDG Mavuse is going to explain, we have started working on the booking system so that people can be staggered across the country for various services. And before they can even come, they should know when are they going to be assisted by who and for which service. So that one area which is still being piloted, as DG indicated before, as and when we are ready, we will make sure that that service is being rolled out completely. The other area that we wanted to strengthen, Chair, is around the issue of communication when our systems are offline. I think that's where we are still lagging a bit, because sometimes we are not able to predict when are we going to go back online. But it's something that we are working closely with our communication, so that as and when we go offline, we have to make sure that our clients are well informed before they get irritated. Now, thanks. I thought I should just give feedback on those two items. Thanks very much, DG and Chairperson.
No, thanks very much, DG Sigama. DG, are we inviting?
I think colleagues will have to be brief. I think it was DDG Mavuso, just on the appointment system and the plans to roll it out to other areas.
Yeah, you've mentioned one of your colleagues after DDG Sigama.
And then it was also the CIO on the network related questions.
Yeah, I'm trying to establish the same name. It's Molefe.
His name is Ntlantla Mabaso.
Oh, okay, yes. So it's Ntlantla Mabaso, and then DDG Mavuso, and then we'll go to the minister.
And then there was DDG HR on the HR-related questions, acting yes. DDG Dambane Molefe Sfanyetso. Yes.
Molefe Sfanyetso.
Yes.
Okay. Can we go to the next one?
Chair, is it Ms. Molefe Sfanyetso or is it Ntlantla Mabaso, the next one?
Yeah, yes. It's, Mr. Mabaso, you can come in, proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members, Minister, DG, and colleagues. So in relation to the networks, I'll quickly touch on the response by looking at the commitments we have made. The DG has already touched on this, so I'm just going to add to some of the issues that go beyond what I think was covered in the DG's area. The one is what we experienced during this meeting, office connectivity, even within our own offices. And this has become worse with the return of bigger staff numbers to the office, but still using the same network for video conferencing. So we've identified that the cost of that is insufficient number of repeaters, and that's going to be pushed. It's currently under a different team, facilities management, but that's in hand. And then the other has to do with increasing, for the same reason, increasing our bandwidth within the offices. So what we're experiencing at head office is also manifesting in other areas, in other offices across the country. Then in relation to network outages, I think I should touch on that as well, Chair, because of the experiences last week. We had a number of offices, especially in KZN, being disconnected between 7:30 in the morning and 5 to 12. And other times, I'll be brief because of time constraints. This was due to power outage on the CITA's core network provider, broadband InfraCo, which affected the Peter Maritzburg switching center, to which all front offices connect in order to access the government network and DHA systems. But these services have since been restored. This then takes me to the some of the commitments we had made around, I think it was 13 November last year, in terms of what we're going to do. The one was the buying of routers and switches, and DG has reported on that, so I won't repeat that. But what we're also doing is we are now looking at reprioritization of the investment plan elements. For example, there's an increased deployment and usage of mobile technologies such as LTE in front of offices, both as a secondary backup connection or primary main connection in areas that are bedeviled by infrastructure, vandalism, theft, and dare I say, possible sabotage. Based on the records assessment visits conducted as part of the digitization project, we found that many offices also do not have appear to have proper maintenance contracts in place for generators and UPS machines. So when there are power failures, there's a domino effect, and that explains the headaches we had last week. The other area where we had made a commitment was on the POC, identified multiple access links for possible gold migration on the CETA, as per the CETA recommendation. We've submitted that list of sites, but as members, CETA is struggling as it is with just the connectivity itself. So we're busy chasing up with CETA on that, and we're escalating a number of the delays. On the positive side, we're working well with CETA in terms of the enterprise architecture review. The DG has mentioned that it's not just the network, but it's the bloated systems that we use that put such a demand on network infrastructure. So we are expecting that the project, which should have started already, will start on the 1st of April. It should have started because we had been offered free architecture services. But when we chased up on that, it looks like now we actually have to procure this from CETA. So the procurement process is looking at us getting in September. The other questions that were asked were on VES and the refugee and asylum seeker system. So I'll quickly touch on those two because of the importance. In relation to the asylum seeker system, the development of the prototype, because there were delays, the team inside Home Affairs has thought it prudent to just develop these internally. So where we are now is that the database design has been completed, the graphical user interface has been designed and shared with the leadership, including the DDG, the DG and the DDG, which is myself. User interfaces are in progress and plan to be finished by 18 February. Further development of the forms to be done are in progress, and we're expecting that this prototype will be completed by the end of, by the 11th of March. So definitely by the end of March will be done. So this is in relation to one of these targets that we were worried that we might not meet. Then in relation to the VAS, the report on the visa adjudication system, some work has already been done in terms of implementing the recommendations from the report. This includes enabling an audit trail and reviewing these audits, this audit trail on a regular basis and implementing backups. There's also work in progress in relation to sanitizing the database itself. And of course, recommendations that have dependencies on other branches, there will still be work to be done in relation to investigations and possible disciplinary action against potential suspects or culprits in this regard. Thank you, Chair. I think I've covered.
Thank you, Mr. Mabaso, for that comment and response. DDG Mavuso.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity. So I'll just answer three quick questions. The first one is in relation to the access model, Honorable Ross. I think there was a mishap in terms of communication because we had made that document available, but we have since sent it to Eddie, so he's got it as we speak. On slide 27, Honorable Kanyile, the issue relating to the delay in terms of the tender, it was mainly the availability of the PAC members. It took longer than we thought, and the appointment thereafter. So I think that's what caused the delay. Chair, on the issue of the booking system, Chair, I'm not sure you're able to see the website
Yes.
The booking system currently, we have put an icon here where the client will just go and put their number there. Unfortunately, this being a public platform, it's difficult for me to put my ID number here. But put an ID number. Then what it does, it takes you to the next page where you then populate your names as they appear in the population register. If you make a mistake there, you will not be able to go ahead because the database, this system talks to the population register. We did not want to pre-populate the names because of to avoid things like phishing and for information and so forth. So that's one of the reasons that we've done. And then obviously it will take to the next page where you authenticate, put your email, and then you're able to book a slot. So how it's going to, this thing's going to be done is that we are rolling it out in various offices now. We started obviously with the offices in Pretoria. We now activated two offices in KZN, and as DG has indicated, this week there's going to be Wynberg and Paarl. So these offices, you can already book a system in this slot in these four offices. This week it will be the Paarl and Wynberg. And then the Cape, Western Cape have requested that we add Khayelitsha, George, I think those are the offices that you needed to add, and also Bellville as part of the pilot. And then Eastern Cape, the team is there today with Lusigi Sigi and Mtata. We wanted them to bring it forward, not those days that were indicated. So how this thing works, Chair, is that every day, the official, it will close at 3 o'clock. It closes at 3 o'clock. So if you try and book at 3 o'clock, you will only get a slot for the day later, not the day in which the following day. And then thereafter, there's going to be automated emails that are sent to the individuals in the office. So each office will provide two or three names, emails. So those emails are built into the system. So they're then able to get the list. So by the time they leave, they know that tomorrow who's coming to collect what. And the Chair, for now, the system is only designed for ID and passport applications and also for collections. Because we can measure time for those products that are automated on live capture. But the ones that are on PMD, we still have not done that. So those ones are still not going to be able to make an appointment. But for these categories where you use collections, and we'll also want to alter the message on collections. When somebody get a trigger to say that your passport or your ID is ready for collection, and then we'll want to add within that message that say, but book an appointment to collect. So that you then avoid this situation that the minister was explaining earlier around the inability to get your document while there's been a message that said, you must apply. So the other issue, Chair, is that there are offices that we want to roll this thing out as quickly as possible. I think one such, Tongaten and Centurion, they've indicated that they want us to fully roll out the system and so that we don't have run dual issues. Because with Centurion, there's been a prevalent issues around selling of slots and also the involvement of some of the officials, particularly the security there. So we are working, obviously, with office managers and Mr. Tugama and his team of provincial managers to be able to mitigate that. The last day of the pilot is the 31st of March, and then thereafter we'll be then scaling it up to offices. I think it's quite an easy to use. We did a lot of research, and also going to some of the clients and offices to be able to actually see whether there'll be an appetite for it. I think we are getting a positive response in that regard. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, TDG Mavuso, for that brief detail. DG, who's responding?
Thanks, Chairperson. It's the acting DDG HR, and then through your indulgence, I think I missed DDG McKay lastly on some of the questions around immigration, and that will be it from us.
Okay. DDG HR Smolishan.
Thank you, DG, and Chairperson Molefasifanyeto, Chairperson, and good afternoon to honorable members, and good afternoon to the honorable minister. Just to respond to the questions that have been raised around vacancies that we have in the department and the impact that they have in the services that we provide, I would just like to echo the sentiments that you have already put forward in relation to the business case that has been submitted to Treasury, that in that document, we have highlighted how incapacitated the department is. For instance, when you look at core business, which is immigration and civic services, particularly in the front offices, we are functioning below 50%. So we can all imagine, you know, how critical the situation is. But also when you look at civic services at head office, it's also just above 50%, which is around 52%. And immigration is about 54%. So this in itself sort of indicates that we are so acutely capacitated and we need to do something about it. But you also mentioned, DG, that the business case or the approval that has been granted by National Treasury would afford us an opportunity to fill vacancies in those areas. For instance, in civic services, you rightfully say it's about 350 posts that we need to fill. And in immigration, we've got about 428. And the remnants of those will be going to IS, IPS, and the areas that you have indicated. And this is through the MTF period. So over a three-year period, we need to make sure that we fill these vacancies as indicated. But also to mention that we have got a process that talks to optimal utilization of staff. What we mean in this instance, we have identified certain support functions that we thought, but also at the recommendation that was given by DPSA, that some of the support functions that we have at head office, we could better utilize them, you know, by redirecting them to core business. And in that instance, we are looking at how we are going to be reskilling them, you know, to be able to fit in those various positions in the front office. And that process is actually overseen by the Director General himself through a staffing committee a process that looks into these areas. Then there was another comment issue that was made, and Chairperson, that it is expected that hoped that these positions that will be filled will primarily be in the front offices. And we can definitely confirm that there's a breakdown that we have for immigration officials in the front offices, but also civic services in the front office, which will look at management and supervisors posts, as well as the front offices officials, and also capacitating admin clerk at hospital level. Then, Gigi, in conclusion, one honorable member has asked about what are the reasons that are causing officials to leave the department. And the study that we have undertaken have shown us that there's a variety of reasons that is leading to officials leaving the department. Key amongst others is where officials are actually looking for, you know, career advancement opportunities in other departments or in other organizations outside of Home Affairs. Some people are talking about burnout, other people are talking about family matters, but also the highest other reason is health-related issues. So in this instance, we are just hoping that where we can provide an intervention, especially in terms of career advancement of opportunities, these posts that are going to be advertised and filled would provide an opportunity for those that are ready to move to the next level to apply for those positions. And then we will see how we take it from there. The vacancy rate, DG, we are at 59.3%, which is the
the total establishment of about 20,000 divided by, you know, the strength, which is about 8,317, which gives us about 59.3%. And overall, Chairperson, to say that DHA is functioning at about 40.7 capacity, which is by far the lowest of the capacity that would be required for any organization that delivers such critical services. However, we remain hopeful, and we are geared to ensure that with the allocation that has been made by Treasury, we will be able to, you know, to up the levels of capacity that we are, you know, that we require in those areas that I have indicated. I hope, Gigi, I have addressed all the issues that have been raised by members. If there is anything that I have left out, I think, you know, it can be raised and we can respond to it. Thank you so much, Chairperson, and thank you, Gigi.
Thank you very much for your response. Thank you very much. DTG McKay, then we'll invite the minister.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, and Honorable Minister and DG. I will just respond to some of the issues raised by the members, and I'll start with Honorable Kanyile. The turnaround times for the applications that you are referring to, Honorable Kanyile, for temporary residence visas, it's 8 weeks turnaround time. Critical skills is 4 weeks. And for permanent residence applications, it's an 8 month turnaround time. Now, we do have backlogs within these applications because of the rotational working arrangements that we have, and also historically because we don't have enough human resource capacity in this particular area to deal with the number of applications that we receive. But I can say I did an audit, Honorable Kanyile, of all the queries coming from the offices of the Honorable Parliamentary Members. And we've resolved between 80 and 90% of these queries that were raised with the Immigration Services. What we have not done was to respond back to your offices with regard to a sheet showing that these applications has already been resolved. And I've put together a team now and a process in place for us to be able to weekly look at the queries that have come and respond to your offices as well in terms of which of these applications or these queries have already been resolved. excuse me, Honorable Ramo Lobeng, with regard to the closure of the refugee stand centers and how staff are utilized, these staff come to office and they are available at the office for online renewal and extensions that are made by clients. They also prepare files for the backlog project for the Refugee Appeals Authority. And they also interview clients for the Standing Committee on Refugee Affairs. They deal with collections of refugee IDs and passports that clients have applied for. And they are also processing failed asylum seekers for repatriation back to their home country. So they are at the offices and they are being utilized in these particular areas. All that they are not doing currently is to look at new applications or coming in, because the offices has been closed for new applicants within the asylum seeker management process. Honorable van der Merwe, ma'am, you are correct. The targets that we set are targets that are set within the available human resources that we have. And as you rightly say, the Immigration Inspectorate, as you know, is totally, totally undercapacitated. So when we look at the impact, and if we look at the huge challenges that we have with regard to illegal migration in the country, you are correct, Honorable Farum Fanumeva, to say that the impact is minimal. And this impact, we will only be able to make an impact within this particular area if we have the required staff numbers in this particular area, especially with regard to the immigration inspectorate function, to be able to have an impact in dealing with illegal migration. We have the Border Management Authority, which is now coming up, and that is also a factor that deals with the impacts. We would have a greater impact with a functioning Border Management Authority, as well as a well-resourced immigration inspectorate to be able to deal with the challenges of illegal migration. The current backlog, you also asked a question, Honorable Fana Mervo, on the current backlog on pending applications within the asylum seeker management process. That is the first instance. We have approximately 4,000 backlog in pending applications. And this backlog is mainly due to the applicants not having turned up for their appointments, for the scheduled appointments to do the processing of that claim. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think I've covered those questions that have been asked with regard to immigration services.
No, thanks very much, DTG McKay. I think we can invite the minister, DG. We've exhausted all the issues, and we'll then establish a way forward in terms of how we're going to monitor, but also track areas where members of the committee have paid more attention. Minister?
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me also mute the camera, please.
Thank you, Minister.
Yeah, thank you. Chair, let me start with a question by Honorable Kanyile about community making a peace with security. I was conducted last week about at least one office in Limpopo where they say the security is very active, and I'm doing something about it. I'm happy that she has added something about Northwest, but my impression is areas where security officers are very active is areas where the office manager does not want to face the people and explain, and they try to make the security guards become part of management and manage queues for them and manage people for them and instead of doing security work. And that's where corruption will come in. Obviously, we'll bring this to an end. The other area I want to deal with is the question from Honorable Ramulo Beng about the refugee centers being closed and what's happening to the staff. I think the DG answered it, but I just want to emphasize, it does not mean that when we close the refugee reception centers, the staff goes home. There are a lot of work they are doing there, including the backlog, which you have just mentioned. The 36 lawyers who have hired with money from the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugee, they need support, and they are being supported by some of these staff members. Now, there's a very important question raised by Honorable Rules about people being suspended and receiving perks and bonuses. I'm saying this is extremely important because it also worries me. But remember, it's because of the type of labor laws and regime we're having, that people who are suspended must be suspended on full pay. I'm not sure about bonuses. I still want maybe, I thought the officials here will help me. But about salaries and perks, it is the law of the country that people who are on suspension, unless there's a very good legal reason, which is very rare, where people are suspended without pay. Most of the suspensions in the public service, as you know, and I suspect even the private sector is bound by that, must be with full pay until the case is over. We've got many cases, Honorable Rules, in Home Affairs, where we are charging senior people. And don't think they just fold our arms, their arms. Some of the very high-powered corruption cases are now in their second year because they postpone during the time of the hearing. They bring in doctors' letters to show that they are sick. Their lawyers bring in excuses that they are appearing in court for other clients. And you may find that you postpone many cases up to 3 months at a time. Hearings do take place. As I'm talking now, some of the high-powered cases, some of which you heard on the media, are on. But we are not just finishing because of those suspensions. Take, for instance, the case of Mr. Bushiri. You are aware that we suspended people who gave Bushiri the documents, the permanent residence documents we have got. You are aware that people have been suspended sometimes back, but you may also be aware that one of them, the most senior of them, has already gone to labor court, and he went 3 times. He went to labor court, he lost, went to labor appeal court, he lost, petitioned the labor court, he lost. All those are processes that take a long time. Meanwhile, they are aiming. Obviously, they are doing that for long. Now, the labor court cases are over. What is left is DC. Then when the DC starts, maybe after a month or so, you get a letter that somebody is sick or the lawyer is not there. So there are lots and lots of delaying tactics. That is why, Chairperson, one of the areas we are looking at, which the Department of Public Service and Administration came up with, is to make sure that we utilize retired judges to sit over these cases, no longer public servants, because we suspect public servants are making a deal with each other, especially when they see that a case is very strong against the employee and they want to end this money, this salary while on suspension for as long as possible before they are fired. But Honorable Rose, also, when we become very successful in the anti-corruption and suspend people, it also weakens us in terms of staffing. I mean, take for instance, on the 8th of December, we suspended 3 very senior members in the human resources. The DDG there is suspended. That's why today, Honorable Chair, you are introduced to an 18 DDG. The DDG there is not that sick or what. It's on suspension from December. The DDG, the Chief Director, and the Director, those are the 3 most senior people, but we have to suspend them because of the activities they've done there. And when you suspend them, you put 18 people, and when you put 18 people, you make openings in your staffing requirements. But that is part of the game anyway. There's nothing you can do, but I just wanted you to understand that. The question raised by Honorable Lizelle, which are of course very true about the lived reality on the ground compared to the achievement that we put here. Honorable members, let's remember that when the departments in government are asked to put their APPs, annual performance plans and all that, there are guidelines from the Department of Public Service and Administration and the monitoring and evaluation. There are serious guidelines on how it is done. You have got to follow those guidelines. They will tell you that you must put in a target that is easily measurable, that you can easily measure and even touch if possible. Now, that's why if you look at the target here, let me give you the target, Honorable Van der Merwe, on the issue of immigration officials having reached 100% of their target. It's because the target says we will do so many inspections. That means we'll go out into the country and inspect factories, do roadblocks, and inspect those who are having undocumented migrants, and we'll do 100 of them. When they do all 100 of them, that is 100% achievement. It does not mean that the problem of migration in the country has been resolved. It simply means the target of doing 100 inspections or 100 roadblocks, it has been done. And this is how the targets actually differ with what you see as the reality on the ground. Because the reality on the ground for you, Honorable Van der Merwe, is that after those inspections, then there should be no problems on immigration. But that's not what is happening. Now, there is a question here which I thought Advocate Moise, the DDG for counter-corruption, will answer. There was a big story in the media about fraudulent IDs that were found in the Johannesburg Metro's property section. And it made lots of noise and lots of stories that IDs were found. I must report to you the counter-corruption with police rushed there. And they found nothing. They didn't find any of those IDs that publicly it was announced or fraudulent IDs were found. What was sent to Home Affairs to counter corruption were pictures, not a hard copy of an ID or a green barcode ID or what. It was pictures of IDs which were taken to Home Affairs, and Home Affairs using those ID numbers, and there were 12 of them, started going into the archives. And yesterday I told you that the archives are manual, and it takes a long time to get into the archives and find those ID numbers. They did and found that one ID does not exist at all. And the other three are not on our system. The others which have been found are now being analyzed. That means we have sent them to analysts to find out exactly what's happening about those IDs, who they belong to, whether the people who are written there are the real owners. It's like the ID which has been doing circles in the social media of a gentleman called Mutembu, which on the picture you can see is a Pakistani national, but it's called Mutembu. We have gone into the archives, we have found the real Mutembu. We will now want to find out whether the real Mutembu collaborated with the Pakistani and got bribed and gave him his documents to defraud, or whether they were defrauded without his knowledge. That's the investigation that we are taking. So when we say counter-corruption is being successful, it is busy doing all those things, Chairperson. The issue of BMA, I think the commissioner has mentioned, but remember, the commissioner and the two deputies only came in November and December, respectively. And now for them to start advertising posts, we need to go ahead from the Department of Public Service and Administration and the interim structure which the department was supposed to approve. I sent a letter to the minister on the 4th of February, I think it's about 11 days ago, and we are still waiting. Immediately, if the minister answers me, then we'll instruct the BMA to start advertising the post. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. Thanks very much. Thanks, members. Honorable members, for your continuing work to oversee the work of the department. Director General, with your team, I must appreciate for the continued hard work you are demonstrating, even in the presentation and the clarity of responses in terms of progress and weaknesses that you have identified and communicate to the committee. We must appreciate the continued work that under the leadership of the Minister and Deputy Minister Njabulo and Nzunza. We have noted as a committee that there were no achievements. Some of the targets were not achieved, and will collectively pay more attention so that we assist the department, but also come closer to the implementation phase for those some of the targets in the next report. Minister, I think, and the Director General, we need to resolve that we must work hard to fight this downtime and to eliminate these long queues for our people. All of us, I think, will agree that the report, to some extent, has demonstrated performance, but we need to identify these areas in practice, the downtime and the queues for our people. We must resolve as a collective, the committee and the Home Affairs, that we must work hard. If there's an area we must begin to fight on, the minister, is this one of a long and downtime. We have convened a CETA last year, and they gave account on the challenges that Home Affairs has been identified. And I think we're identifying progress in your responses and the interaction that we've raised. So we need to pay also more attention around that space. Every time we come back to the committee, there's an issue of long queues, and that is contributed by the downtime. But I think the initiative and the progress programs that the department is will be interacting with will able to assist us. But I'm just raising that it's a matter that we must put it high in our agenda. But Ed, you're going to assist us with identifying key issues that members have raised in all the and tracking them around the civic immigration and the BMA. We need to take a tracking space so that we're able to assist the department, but also assist to interface with other stakeholders, departments on the issues that are raising. We appreciate a lot, Minister and DG, that Treasurer has responded to the call that we have been raising as the committee. And we hope that the members, in the manner that they've contributed, and yourselves in terms of the program plan, will able to assist us to complement the work that you are doing as the committee. We want to appreciate this report, the performance demonstrated, the weaknesses that are there. We'll monitor and we hope that with your team, Minister, and the entire administrative, our people on the ground, the staff, will make sure that the performance of the department improves. Is there any other matter before we close this item? Okay, thanks very much, Minister. Thanks the team and honorable members. We'll stand off this item. Mr. Matons, is there any other announcement or any other item?
Yeah, Chair, there was an issue of on the State of the Nation address. I'm not sure if maybe Adam could maybe take maybe 5 minutes. The impact of the State of the Nation address on our work as a committee.
Can I establish, Mr. Matons, if the item can be deferred to the next meeting, noting that the president also will be closing tomorrow, responding tomorrow, and I think we can enrich that brief of the committee. The minister has dealt with the presentation yesterday, the debate, and I think we appreciate the work. Won't it be advisable to defer that item in the next meeting?
We can do, Chairperson. There's no problem.
Mr. Adam?
Chairperson, if I can just add, yes, I have emailed members the document, so if they need to prepare for the debate, they can also just read the document. It's not a long document, it's 3 pages. And also, I just want to add on the tracking mechanism, we do have a tracking mechanism that we distributed to members last year, and we'll just add the new issues that are emerging to that tracking mechanism, and I'll just remind members where the link is so they can monitor that themselves.
Okay. No, thanks very much. We'll defer that item. And I think also that the debate is continuing now in the House at 2 o'clock, and tomorrow the president will be responding. It will enhance the areas that you want to brief the committee on, Adams and Mr. Matunsi. Thanks very much, colleagues. Minister and your team, thanks very much that we've adjourned the meeting.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you. Goodbye.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Mr. Matunsi, let me call you on something quickly.
Oh, okay.
Bye.